And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA from the BEAU Tethel Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. I feel better today. No, finally getting caught up on some sleep. All right. But it's gonna get tough again. I mean, as soon as we get done here, we got to go down and start setting up for the Prepper Fest at the Arizona State Coliseum and fairgrounds there and so on. So we're gonna, have a party this Friday with the speakers and attendees and so on, and then Saturday after is another party, kind of the uber secret kind. Well, it's just, like speaker stuff. But the, a lot of interesting speakers. We'll get into that a little bit. But I tell you, this is what's going to go happen today. In the first hour, we have Matt Mills and Chris Flood. Now, Chris Flood is Matt's attorney. And I'll tell you the story real quick. And right after I introduce who's coming on the last 2 hours, it's going to be Brett Vinat. He is from School Sucks Project. Okay. Now, School Sucks Project. .com out of New Hampshire. He's in Arizona. Seems like a lot of New Hampshire guys are visiting Arizona about now. You know what? We're going to go to Arizona. It's like cold. And then they'll go back, I'm sure. But now we'll see if we can snag some. Well, what we're going to go ahead and do is we'll be talking with Brett, and we'll go around the compound here and so on, show him what's up. And then we're going to get down to the Prepper Fest and put up our dome. I mean, that takes a couple hours to do that. So, Gina and I are going to go get that taken care of. Now, let me tell you about Matt and Chris. They're on the line. We'll get right to them. What happened was I was at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, and Luke Radowski was there, and we're just chatting it up and so on. And he said, I'm worried about my friend Matt Mills. What happened was he was the guy that was at, Donna has this up. I'll show you a little bitty clip up here. He was the guy that went to the Super Bowl, or after the Super Bowl, they had a live broadcast, one of the players there and so on, and he finangled his way in, and he got to go up to the microphone in over 5 seconds to millions and millions and millions of people and say, oh, 9/11 was the inside job, and then boom, he's gone. And they went, and the man, they did not like that none too much at all. Well, we'll talk about, how this happened and what happened, but what I did is on my way home, I said, does he have an attorney? Does he have support? Is he raising any money? Does he have, you would think that the 9/11 truth or community, somebody would be like, I want to make sure he's taken care of. I don't know how the community is doing. He's a citizen journalist doing the Luke Radowski kind of interface stuff. And the FBI got involved, so this is national live television. This is like V for Vendetta, Super Bowl bombing kind of thing, in a video way. So I'm going, okay, so we want to make sure he's taken care of, but they had court. It looks like they might have got it, done. I talked to Mark Victor. I said, hey, man, you got motions and files sitting all up on top of your desk, kind of all, can you help a brother out? And you're like, yeah, we'll work out something. Give me a number. We'll work out something. It looks like they got it worked out. Let's go ahead and say hello to Matt Mills and Chris Flood. Matt, Chris, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Ernest, thanks for having me.
All right, now this is what we're going to do. You know, what I was hoping, this whole thing is, I said, go get a PayPal and get a QR code for a Bitcoin account. His attorney takes Bitcoin and says, you know, see if we can just, you know, over the next few days, we'll put this up. We'll make a big woohoo out of it and see if we can raise a pittance, a couple of thousand dollars. A couple of thousand dollars for the man that got live television. 9/11 was inside job. I mean, whether you believe it was or not, that's not even the point. I mean, the boy got skills. Okay, so let's go ahead and before we get to your attorney, Chris Flood, which, as I understand, happened to be a, you know, he's a young attorney. He was a high school friend, acquaintance that you knew, that kind of somebody you could trust in, you know, trying times like this. So it's good that you had a friend come help you out, because my biggest concern was, what the hell were you thinking was going to happen? You didn't have, right, like, you know, an army out waiting for you, an attorney, this, that. I mean, did you actually expect to be able to make it to the microphone? Were you kind of, okay, damn, I'm here, now I got to do it?
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't expect to be there. It was pretty much just seize the moment kind of thing. I totally didn't expect to get into the press room. So once I was there, I saw the microphone. I knew it was live. I just said, you know, F it. And I just grabbed the mic. So wasn't planned at all, so I didn't have a army of attorneys outside waiting for me or anything.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go from the beginning. All right, we got the rest of this and three more segments. We'll get to it. So what we're going to go ahead and do is, let's start it off. You know Luke Howe.
I know Luke Radowski. I actually interned with him about probably almost 2 years ago at this point. There was a little... he was asking for people to, you know, submit. He was looking for interns on his website, so I contacted him. We met in a park for about a half an hour, got to know each other, and then I went to the Democratic and Republican conventions with him and got to see what he does. And pretty much after that, I've been doing this myself, and I've had a lot of fun doing it. So that's pretty
doing what? I mean, you know, you describe what Luke showed you.
Confronting politicians, how to get into things, you know, putting camera in people's face, asking tough questions that the media won't ask, making videos, just stuff like that, pretty much confrontational kind of stuff.
Okay, so give us some other examples. Have there been other politicians or thing? I mean, I know, yeah, you're in New York City, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He was all over Bloomberg's butt for a while.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
All these guys. So, you know, I'm just, so, you know, help
well,
me
pretty
out.
Pretty much, if people want to see, like, you know, all my confrontations and things, they go to YouTube Mills Most. That's my YouTube channel. I got a bunch of videos on there. So, there's so many to describe. It's, you know, if people want to check it out, I guess they can just go to my YouTube channel.
Okay. As we're going in, let's go ahead and watch the original video here of what's happened. Let me go and see if I can turn this up. All right, here we go.
No, I always imagine myself making great plays, but you never think about being MVP.
MVP speech.
Investigate 9/11. 9/11 was perpetrated by people within our own government.
Boom. Boom. You know, and they're like, oh, that, oh, who let all that right get by? So then what happened? They just...
Everybody all right?
Everybody all right? Everybody all right? Did he scare you?
They didn't know what to do. There was a PR guy that was really mad. I probably got him... I don't know if I got him fired, but I probably got him in trouble. And he was just extremely pissed off, and he didn't know what to do. And he brought me out, and he walked me around. He didn't know what to do. And he finally brought me out to the train station, and he goes, there's a train. Don't ever come back, or get the fuck out of here, or something like that. And so, but I wasn't even arrested. They didn't take my name at this point. And what I did, I took a dollar out of my wallet, and because it was late at this point, it was like, whatever. I was trying to buy a cigarette from somebody. So then I was just hanging out there for like a minute or two, and then he came back and put his hand on my shoulder. He's like, no, you're coming with me. So I was actually almost gone. I almost got out of there without even giving my name. But then he took me back, and he brought me to these two police officers. They took me downstairs and cuffed me, and I guess arrested me. Then they interrogated me for a while.
All right, well, we'll go ahead and finish up when we come back. But this is, I mean, what's the first thing that we're thinking? Run away! Run away! Yeah. He said, yo, hindsight, what's all these things that we learn? You know? Run away! I did it! I made it! I can go! I'm done! Zoom! I'll get a cigarette later. All right. So this is the kind of stuff you need to kind of plan for just a little bit, but sometimes you just have opportunity. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com. Okay, the what I'm going to go ahead and do is we'll back up just a little bit. We'll do the story, but there's more to it. How did you get in there? How were you part of the press? How did you wind up in the freaking room? I mean, you know, you had to go through to it. Then you videotaped it. Did they take the videotape? I mean, there's a lot more to the story. I want to get more of that when we go in. Then we'll get in. Because to me, it's, we'll get into some of the legal stuff and all that. And then, of course, your trial and all that kind of thing. But then when you get done with this, hopefully in the next few minutes, you know, because I'll stop yakking. And what will happen is that that'll leave an opportunity for Chris to kind of hopefully, you know, maybe a little bit of legal expertise. But the big thing is that he was the one that was talking to a lot of these guys and the prosecutors. And because to me, this was a political thing. This was, you know, they're looking for damage control. How much do we want to make a big deal out of this? That's where I was interested. I'm going, they do not want to make a big deal out of this. You know, I don't know what you guys are thinking, but I was immediately going, man, if they got any intelligence whatsoever, they just want it to go away.
Yeah.
So this is, you know,
that was pretty much their stance.
Well, the conversation behind the scenes between lawyers and so on is where you're going to come in, Chris. I don't know if you found the conversations of interest, but I sure as hell want to know what happened. Yeah, you with me?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they didn't push this thing very far. You know, typically when arrest complaints are issued by police, it's sent up to the prosecutor's office. And, you know, this is a critical point because the prosecutor could either add charges, downgrade charges. They kind of make a determination where this thing's going to go. I mean, this is, you know, in the first 48 hours generally after an incident. And here they downgraded and kept it in municipal court. You know, I figured that they did this because, you know, they wanted this thing to go away. If this is up in Superior Court, you know, the media is going to be all over it.
I know what it was. It was, you know, destruction of evidence. I mean, all right, here we go.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. On the line, we got Matt Mills and Chris Flood, his attorney. Matt Mills is the guy after the Super Bowl. They had the MVP, you know, live television. You know, when the heck does that happen? And, I guess they don't even have a delay. They do now. So here you had Matt Mills, got into the press corps there, microphones right there. He was like, I don't know why people haven't done this more often. Go up and say, you know, 9/11, you know, perpetrated by government, kind of, you know, done. Boom. I just bombed you, you know, video bomb. So he got out to millions and millions of people, and this became, and it kind of, ooh, a little trending on, you know, some social network, people searching, doing who to, what the heck happened. They go, you know, just get out of here. Well, I know that there was somebody went to the guy, told him to get out, and said, yeah, well, where is he? Oh, crap, he's over there. Well, go get him. You know why? I don't know. Somebody's going to want us to get him. So they go get him, and then they bring him in, and they talk to him. But I want to find out what happened before that. How in the hell did you get in this, you know, 15 gazillion layers of security, blah, blah, blah. Walk us through this, okay? Matt, help me out, okay? You got in there how?
Well, the Super Bowl was in town. It was a big event. There's players all, you know, in Times Square signing autographs. It was like a two-week-long event. There was a Super Bowl stuff everywhere. So I knew the Super Bowl was in New Jersey. I knew I could get out there, and I wanted to get really just to the parking lot so I could see, you know, tailgaters and things like that and just interview people because I had some – I was trying to make a video kind of unrelated to what happened that night, and I just wanted to interview fans. So I wanted to get to the stadium, but – you couldn't get even to the stadium without a ticket. So the farthest you can get is, what is it? Whatever, junction. Train station a couple train stops away. So I got there, and you couldn't get any further with a ticket, so there was employee buses right there. So I guess they were shuttling employees over to some other spot. So I just walked onto the bus. No one stopped me. I went to the back of the bus, played on my phone. Then we got to some other venue where they were lining up and getting on other buses. So I stood in some line, and we're supposed to wrap around the left all the way down. And I just looked, and there was an open bus. So I just walked over, got on the bus, and the bus door closed. It took off. I was surprised it closed. No one, you know.
Were there people on the bus? I mean, there were just a bunch of
people
on the bus?
Yeah, there were people on the bus. There was only standing room, so I was just standing, you know, holding the bar. And we got to... Then at that point, we got to the stadium. So I get off, and now I'm walking around the stadium. Now, I got turned down pretty much every place I tried to get in. So at this point, I figured, you know, I'm probably not going to be able to get in. So I walked around and back and around and back probably for, you know, 45 minutes. And then I see another employee bus come, and a bunch of people get off. So there's like a big group of people going into one of these doors. So I got into the middle of this line. And once it got to me, they said, that's not the right pass. You got to get in. I said, I'm part of the press. I need to get in. I'm late. I just have to go. I can't deal with this. And she's like, all right, just go in. So then I got in. Now, this is the part that you really can't get by. It's like, this is like the miracle, basically, how I got in. Because once you get past this line, they scan your ticket. So it's not, they don't just look at you. They actually scan it. They have to scan everybody's. So I was like, you know, this isn't going to work, but I'll go up there. I'll try the same thing, whatever. I got up to the guy, and he's like, you don't have a bar. This isn't even the right thing. You can't go. I was like, I've already been checked. I'm late. I got to go. And surprisingly, he just let me in.
So okay, what did you have? I mean, do you have any piece of paper of anything?
No, I had a press pass from some old event that's unrelated that looked – it didn't even really look that similar. It was just kind of the same shape. It wasn't even the same color. It was just a rectangular pass, kind of similar to the pass. So I had it under my shirt, so people just saw kind of something around my neck, and I had the pass actually in my jacket, so they couldn't really see the pass. So, you know, they would just assume I had the pass. And once I got past two layers, I think people just assumed I had it because I'm already in, you know?
Yeah.
So then it was a little easier at that point. So then I got past the third one. They pretty much just let me right in. And then the fourth one is to get into the stadium. That was actually hard, too, because I got turned down a couple times. And I just said to the same lady, I said, I'm late, and she let me in. I went up the escalators, and I walked right in. I see the field. I'm like, damn, I'm actually in the Super Bowl. So really, it wasn't hard at all. Anybody could have done it. It was just pretty much... it wasn't really the best security, basically.
Well, there's some more training videos, being done now. Okay, so... You got into the Super Bowl, but you're not just in the Super Bowl. You're in the press area or something?
Well, yeah. When I got in, it was like 1:30 in the afternoon, really early. There was no one in the stadium. So I went all the way to the top, the tippy-tippy top, and I just sat there for a few hours, just hanging out. Then when people started to come in, I felt a little more comfortable. I could, like, walk around. So then I stayed up top the entire game. I just walked around the stadium, around and around, and I was asking people questions about... you know, the thing I was trying to make a video about. Well, I was making a video about the Illuminati symbolism in the last two Super Bowl halftime shows. That's what I was making a video about.
Okay.
You know, do they think there's something deeper involved, or are they just trying to sell the show? You know, what is with all the satanic symbolism? You know, is it just for shits and giggles, or is there something deeper going on? That's pretty much what I was making a video about. So, but they took all that footage. They deleted all this, so this is all gone.
Oh man. Okay, go. So then
in the third quarter, I ventured down to the lower levels of the stadium because I was going to run down on the field with the other press. But I was walking around on the lower level. I saw the press room. So I was like, damn, this is pretty cool. So I went in there, and there was these two security guards outside the door. And I said, you know, when are they going to let people in the press room? And then they just kind of looked at me weird, like, if you have the credentials, you can go in any time. I was like, okay. So I turned around. I walked away. Then I came back a minute later, and I just walked by them, and I just walked into the room. And I walked up these little stairs. I'm like, damn, they probably are definitely following me. And I looked over, and they didn't follow me in. So I just, like, got in. And I was just waiting in the press room from the third quarter on, and there was nobody in there till the game was over. As soon as the game was over, everybody came in, all the reporters and all this stuff.
So where were you set? How close were you to the podium? Did you position yourself?
Well, yeah, it was really big press room. So there were two big podiums for the MVP of the Super Bowl and the winning coach. So those were the two big ones in the middle. And then there was four little ones. So there was eight little ones just for the players. So when I got in there, there was a big ruckus in the corner. When I got in there, I just went to the corner. I was just watching TV, just with my back turned to everybody, so they couldn't see that I didn't have the right credentials. So I just was watching TV. Then when the game concluded, maybe it was Peyton Manning or something like that, because there was one player that all the media went to. So it totally like drained the room of media. They all went to this one corner. So there was like probably 75 media people all trying to ask this one football player question.
Okay. Wait. Hold up. We're going into the break. We're on the edge of our seats. Okay. So Matt Mills has got in, not just, you know, on the bus. He's inside the Super Bowl just BSing his way through. You know, this is like Uber security. Okay. Well, somebody got their weenie whacked on this one. You know, they were examining, and so are we. Now, that's great. This is exactly what I needed. Okay. So we're, you know, you got to be patient. If you're going to be a sniper, you got to be able to sit there for half a day, you know, still. Okay. So we'll go, when we come back, we'll pick it up from there. You're in, the game's over. All the reporters flood in, and some of the, you know, popular players, maybe it's Peyton out over there, boom, they run around, you're positioning in the place, and we'll pick it up from there, okay?
Okay.
All right. And there's nothing you need to add right now, is there, Chris?
No, not really.
Okay. Then we're gonna...
Yeah, I mean, if they let you out afterwards, run for the hills, Matt. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
So,
well, besides that,
so when we get through, just go the same pace you are. Just tell the whole thing and boom, because you know once you get done with the story, and then they accosted you, and then they let you go, and then you're jerking around, you know, for whatever reason. Lesson learned. Then, which they probably, you know, had droned you at home later anyway. I mean, sooner or later they're gonna, you know. But it would have been more press, because what would have happened, it would have been the search on. It would have been like the, you know, looking for that kid in the boat in Boston or something. I mean, you know, they'd been all over it. So anyway, you know, in hindsight, you learned whatever, but it worked out all right. But what we'll go ahead and do is try and get through this as much as possible. So before the end of this next segment, Chris gets to comment, okay? And then in the final segment, of course, it'll be mostly Chris. So let's go ahead and try and whip through this. Yeah, you're doing great. I don't want you to cut it short, but you know, I want to leave some time in this next segment for Chris, okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative.
FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Yeah, we're working. Donna's working a lot on, we're getting a couple of dozen people. I'm going to get this Ukraine, Crimea, whatever thing. And it looks like we got, they're working out details for Dr. Paul to come on. And that's going to start. I mean, I really, voting, election stuff, I don't care. But when it comes to international, geopolitical, thermonuclear, doinking the bear in the chest, Putin, Obama kind of playing game crap, I'm like, all right, you made me get off the couch. I'm put down my six pack. I'm gonna learnify myself. I've been talking to a lot of the guys. I mean, it's gonna be good. But damn it, they made me look. Oh, you want it? Oh, we're gonna fight, uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. Well, 9/11. Did we get the truth on that one? Did we? Well, not enough to, keep Matt Mills from being a butthead, okay? So this is what happened. Matt is, hey, I get on this bus, okay. Nobody stopped me. I got like a little lanyard around my neck and say, hey, I'm late for a very important date and I'm pressed, and, because I am. And now, the press looks like anybody anyway. So, he just gets on. He starts following the crowd, a little bit more crowd. A couple of people, he had to go, hey, man, I just got, oh, I'm fine, whatever, go. So those are the guys that, not allowed. They're going to be in trouble, I'm sure. So then he gets in and he waits for hours through the game. He gets there in early afternoon, like 1 o'clock or something. Boom, he waits for a few hours. The game starts. It hits about the third quarter. He goes down. He finds out where the press room is. He kind of BS's his way through there. He's sitting there waiting. The people start coming in after the game. All the reporters run over. They want to interview probably Manning or something like that. They go over the kind of that. And that's where we're at now. So pick it up there, Matt. As you're in the main room and they go over, to somewhere doing something. Yeah, and you started what? Go.
Well, some big football player came in and pretty much drained all the reporters to one area of the room. And so I got a good spot by what was told to me was the MVP, going to be the MVP podium. And I was looking around, and all of a sudden I looked back and he was there. I was like, oh, shit, Malcolm Smith, right there. And he just sat down and started talking. It was live TV. It was already live on him. So as soon as he goes on the video, I never thought I'd be MVP. That's literally, as soon as he walked on the podium, he sat right down. So it was going. And I was just looking at the mic. I'm like, I got to do it now.
Okay, now wait a minute. How did you know it was live?
I figured this had to be live because he's the MVP. I mean, why wouldn't ESPN, out of all the players that are getting interviewed right now, at that point, there was probably five players getting interviewed around the room. But this was the main one. There was no MVP coach at this point. There was no other, it was just other small. I mean, there's obviously probably Peyton Manning way over there, but I figured they'd do the MVP live.
So you were just assuming it. It wasn't like it was on the TV screen or something. Assuming. And they, I'm wondering why they didn't have a delay. They always have a delay on this kind of crap.
I didn't know. I figured they had a delay. I didn't know what happened because I was locked up. I didn't know it was on YouTube or anything like that. So I didn't know anybody saw it. And I actually thought, hey, there's probably a delay. No one probably saw that. I was actually no one's going to believe this. I'm like, no, because my camera wasn't on. I didn't videotape this. But I was like, dude, I'm going to tell this to my friends. I jumped up. I grabbed the mic.
Okay. Now, did you do any videotaping of you getting in, going past checkpoints?
I past two gates with me videotaping. I had my cell phone camera in my shirt pocket, like my front shirt pocket, when I got past two gates. But the cops deleted all the good footage off my cell phone and all the footage off my...
Okay, we'll go ahead and get to that in a little bit. But, you know, so you were videotaping some of this. You would have had some street cred, okay? Some evidence. All right, so you go in, and now's your opportunity. He starts talking, and pick it up. Go.
He starts talking. I don't really remember what happened, but by watching the video, I it rings a bell what happened. But I just jumped up there, and I said whatever I said. And that was it. I pretty much got off the stage. The whole entire room was fucking shocked. Didn't know what to do. They were just like hands on their head. They didn't know. They really didn't know what to do.
I mean,
like,
were they? Did anybody crack a smile? Did they think the regime was over?
If I would have jumped up there and said something dumb, everyone would have probably like, "You're an asshole. Get out of here!" Like probably wanted to punch me in the face because it was 9/11. It was. I mean, you could see his vibe change real quick. The MVP. Like when I brought up 9/11, he's like, "Oh shit." And that's the same exact vibe everybody had. They would just have this look on their face like, oh, shit, like 9/11. Like, nobody would even look at me. Like, I would walk and people just get out of my way. Like, who is this guy? I changed the vibe of the room like that.
No, that is an interesting observation. You said what you said. We played it before. You said what you said. You start walking. They're like, you know what? There is a red carpet to the door for this guy. Just go right on out that way.
That's how it was. That's really how it was. Even the cops, like, even all the cops downstairs, because it was a big scene. All the cops started flooding. They're like, oh, that's the guy. And they were pretty much like, it was almost like an ultra level of respect they had for me. Even though they didn't really like me, they had this massive amount of respect, and they were just like, oh shit, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, he did. Like, the guy just, man, he just doinked the king on the forehead, and we need to, like, you know, not sure how we want to handle this one. All right. So as you go down, the whoever guy in charge of something, you know, his you know, weenie's on the block, so he's going, damn it. He's going, get out of here. And you just, boom, you keep walking, and then you stop walking.
He brought me all the way to the train. He's like, if there's a train, get on the train, and don't come the fuck back. Or
okay, wait. The train, uh-huh. How far away? You're talking, he walked you all the way out of the stadium? So this is like
he
a five-minute walk?
All the way out of the stadium, probably about 300 to 400 feet. All the way to the train station, all the way there. So he walked me literally like...
Any conversation?
He was not really. He was just like pretty much like... No, there was no conversation. It was just a stone look on his face. He didn't really know what to say. He didn't really know what I did, I think, at this point, because he was around the room. He knew I jumped up on stage and did something stupid. I don't think he knew it was about 9/11.
Oh! So
he really did not know. So then he's like, there's the train, get the fuck out of here. So then I look, and he's walking back. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm going. So then, pretty much like an idiot, I tried to, you know, bum a cigarette from somebody for like 2 minutes. And then he comes back, and so I should have just been out. So that's obviously a lesson learned. But then he grabbed me by the shoulder. He's like, you're coming with me. He brought me all the way downstairs. There was two police officers waiting for me, like, senior, older.
Yeah, I'm just like, you're coming with me. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, already it's like...
Well, I thought he was a cop at this point. I didn't know he was a PR guy till this whole thing. I thought he was a cop the whole time. He was acting like a cop. That's why I went with him. That's why I was like obeying his command, because I thought he was a police officer.
Okay, so here are so many lessons here. I bet you know, Chris is ready to jump in on this one. You know, it's time to go to Chris. Let's do this. Chris, all right. You know, as an attorney from this story, you have any advice for anybody?
Well, obviously, Matt didn't have to go with this guy. Even if he was an officer, you know, if an officer is just asking you questions, that's what's called a field inquiry generally. And, you know, you have a right as an individual to say, I don't want to answer your questions, and just continue on your way. So until an officer is actually detaining you, you know.
Oh, no, I know this drill. Am I being detained? Bang. No, you're being dead. I mean, you know.
Obviously, in this situation, his adrenaline's probably rushing. All sorts of thoughts going through his head. He's not thinking clearly. And, you know, he thinks that he has to go with this individual. But
okay, so
not even be an officer. So
one thing I want to get, we'll get more, we're coming up on the break. But I tell you, Chris, you know, how long after this were you engaged? I mean, what was your first meeting? You know, Matt's calling you and explaining, you're going, what?
Well,
was that you?
I didn't speak to Matt a friend called me the next day and was like, did you see Matt Mills yesterday? And I'm like, no. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, just open the internet up. You know, I was really busy. I went to work that morning. I think I had to be in court. And, you know, I didn't catch the news in the morning, so I get home that night. And, you know, I start searching around, and I'm like, holy hell.
Oh, you know, I'm going to be a famous attorney. Okay, when we come back, that's where we'll pick it up, you know, with Chris Flood, attorney that shot to the front.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
Okay, that's good. When we come back, Chris, I apologize. We got such, you know, an hour goes by quick, man.
Yeah, so, don't worry about it. I understand.
So when we come back, what we're going to do is pick it up from there. Yeah, you know, Matt, I remember Matt. Matt, what's up, Matt? And kind of do damn. And then you go through your thing. But what I'm really interested in is the first conversations you had with the other side, you know, what their demeanor was and who, what,
well,
I mean.
Well, interestingly, I didn't have any conversations until we actually appeared, which was his second court appearance. You know, I had sent them letters, made a phone call, and the lack of kind of attention I was getting from them, you know, led me to believe that they were just trying to suppress this thing and squash it.
Well, what were you prepared to do something on the destruction of the evidence? I mean, they got videotaped, and they destroyed, and then they're going to go have a trial? Hell, that would have been the whole freaking trial, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's tough. I mean, because were we going to claim that the evidence was exculpatory, what was on there?
And all how the hell do they know?
I know. Oh. That's the thing. So without the evidence, you're making an argument that prosecutorial misconduct.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about the legal crap. This is all PR. See, that's why I was interested in. That's why Mark was interested. We were going to help. It was all about, you know, just, you know, start throwing mud up on the wall and saying, oh, let's just see what sticks. Let's find out what we can find out. We need to do some discovery. We need to talk. And I knew they were like, hell no. The guy's gotten, he's lawyered up, and we did hell no. Make it go away. Why? You know, because they're going to, you know, he's guilty. I go, of course he's guilty. That doesn't mean I got to say I'm guilty.
I think they want to make it go away because they spent about $1 billion on security.
I know. It's just, it is to laugh. Ha, 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 ha. So I'm going, you know, this is, you know, there's always a Neo. There's always that one guy. All right, here we go.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yeah, Matt Mills. Put in Matt Mills. Declare your independence. Or Matt Mills, Ernest Hancock, Matt Mills. You come up to this archive show, you'll see, you know, the Bitcoin account. You'll see the PayPal. You'll see. Give the brother a couple of dollars. I mean, you know, seriously. You didn't sit in the stadium for hours and hours and hours before the game, and that hour and hour and did kind of he did for for, I don't know, my entertainment. I thought it was cool. You know, so this is, you know, and fortunately it's a couple $1,000. Seriously, now one of you guys out there just go there, done. You know, I mean, we'll do that. I want them taken care of. We have. My webmaster is, had an emergency doing a couple day thing, or I just do it today, but maybe I can get Donna to go ahead and put up a funding center thing up. We just need a couple $1,000. We're going to go ahead and put that up. So I have Donna do work on that today. We'll get them going on that. Cause I want to have, seriously, a couple $1,000 for this. Heck, I want to be on the list of having given some money. I go, nah. You know, this is $1 billion. Somebody got a bunch of money on security. Somebody got a bunch of money for them not to rush the halftime show. Somebody got a bunch of money because what happened when they had the Super Bowl here in 08, it was the Patriots versus the Giants during the revolutionary presidential race. Ron Paul, we had all kinds of, we were part of the halftime show. We had the Arizona Breakfast Club. We got, had a bunch of us going. And right, we showed up in the Ron Paul World's Longest Limousine. Joby Weeks brought that thing down. We went and we showed up in the staging area. We're getting ready to go. We went to rehearsals three or four times. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers going. We're getting on the bus to go down there. And sheriff deputies, about a dozen of them, pulled us all off to say, no. You know what you're going to do. And I'm like, damn it. But if we had Matt Mills there, we would have got in. Okay. All right. So, Chris, help us out here, man. You know, here, you get a friend telling you, hey, Matt's on TV. Okay, whatever. Matt Mills. Boom. Damn. All right, Matt. Looks like you need some hip. Okay. Did he contact you or you contact him? How'd it happen?
Well, Matt reaches out to me on Tuesday, and it's kind of like, you know, I need some advice here. I think I may be in some trouble. And I'm like, yeah, well, last night I saw you talking to Tom Brokaw. I'm like, you know, you really need to stop talking, because my concern was, you know, something that's getting this much attention. Generally, when police issue complaints against somebody, in New Jersey, you have indictable offenses, which are considered felonies in the rest of the country, and disorderly persons, which are considered misdemeanors. So generally, when somebody is charged with a crime that could be an indictable offense, it's sent up to the prosecutor to make a determination. You know, what do we want to charge him with? Do we want to add charges to this? Or do we want to downgrade it down to municipal court? So, you know, he's in an area where decisions haven't been made necessarily from the state's position on what they want to do with his case. You know, and he's out there talking to the media, you know, potentially digging his own grave. So I'm like, for starters, you need to stop talking immediately. And then, you know, I was curious, are they going to try to make, you know, take a hardline political stance on this and make an example out of him? Or is the prosecutor going to have an agenda, you know, personally against what he said, take personal offense to it, you know, and slap additional charges on him?
If we're lucky.
Well, it depends how you look at it, right?
So, well, I got a question here, you know, real quick to Matt. Tom Brokaw, what the hell are you talking to Tom Brokaw? How'd that happen?
No, I didn't talk to Tom. I interviewed Tom Brokaw a couple years ago, so that's what that was. He never interviewed me. I talked to some other radio people, but I never talked to Tom Brokaw.
Okay, so
I did talk to, you know, a handful of, you know, independent journalists and things like Alex Jones and stuff like that.
Okay. So, Chris is seeing all these interviews and Tom Brokaw. He's like, you know what? Just shut up, whoever you're talking to. Okay.
I guess when you Google him, you know, and the Star Ledger had an article on this, you know, New Jersey's primary paper, and all these things are popping up with it. And I'm just like, this is too much. You know, he's got to step back here. But, you know, so when I take the case, I immediately reach out to the courts, put a notice of appearance in, contact the prosecutor on the municipal level, requesting all the discovery from the police, and make a call to him. You know, when nobody gets back to me in a couple days, I'm starting to think, you know, maybe this is something that they're kind of just going to suppress down a municipal court, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want the added attention that could come with it.
Okay, how many days after the Super Bowl was it that you took it on, did a notice of appearance?
Three days later, so the day after Matt contacted me.
Okay, so you're in there saying, all right, here we go. And then it wasn't until, just last week, so beginning of March or something, before you guys actually wound up in court. But there had to have been an appearance or something first, or a charge.
Exactly. The court sends me a letter. Prosecutor never gets back to me, and he's like, the court appearance is scheduled for this date. That was his arraignment. I just waived his appearance, entered a not guilty plea, and then they sent me a new court date with the packet of discovery, which was, you know, all the information from the police and the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority.
So they sent you discovery. They sent you their reports and all that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, so okay, did they talk about the deletion of the video that he had from his two recording devices?
No, of course not.
Did that
come
up? Was that, you know, did they reference it? Did they say they did it?
No.
Boom! Done. Destruction evidence. It's over, man. See, that's why I was so interested when I talked to Luke Radowski, and he was telling me this, and I'm going, wait. He had the videotape of all the security points he went through. He had the videotape of him doing it, how he did it, what he did, when he went, and then they destroyed that, and they don't even mention kind of what? I'm going, hell, there's your trial right there. I want to talk about all the 9/11 stuff. Just, that doesn't even matter. You know, we're going to talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let's go ahead and have a talk. You know, and they're going, no, they don't want to talk about it. Do they?
No, oh, no, not at all. And that's exactly a thought in my head. Well, you know, when I take a case on, I'm looking at it threefold. And these aren't mutually exclusive. These are three ways to defend a case. Factually, is somebody not guilty? Two, were someone's rights violated in one way? You know, destruction of evidence would be one of them. You know, illegal seizure of evidence, involuntary statements. Three, mitigation. Okay, if we can't win on point one or two, how can we mitigate damages? So, you know, in this instance, you know, I could fight the destruction of evidence. I could fight the fact that he gave a statement without being Mirandized when they had him down in holding. And ultimately, we can go to a trial and, you know, I think we have a good chance to potentially win, see where the chips fall. But, you know, I also want to feel out, what does the prosecutor want to do? You know, what kind of deal can we get? And, you know, and you weigh the potential, the pros and cons of pushing this thing forward. You know, what happens if we push it forward? We have to understand, you're down in municipal court. Municipal court judges are political figures. You know, they're appointed by the town mayors. And, you know, if you don't get a just result in municipal court, your recourse is to appeal it to the superior court. It's very time-consuming. It's very
costly. Did you ever look at it as a political thing, political activist? See, this is how I looked at it. I'm going, you know, I can see where this is going. And I can see all the things they don't want to talk about. You know, the security, the Super Bowl, the most secure billion-dollar contract of blah, blah, blah. And then on live television, here's a guy doing the 9-11, probably the one thing they definitely don't want brought up, sure as crap, in New York, New Jersey. Okay? So this whole thing, I'm going, yeah, we win. And what's the mechanism? And that's the first thing I asked Matt. I go, Matt, how much time are you willing to do? You know, what? What is it that you're, I mean, how much time are you willing to set for it? You get men, woo, looky here. What's the maximum sentence? I go, all right, well, are you willing to do that? And then write the book when you get out. I mean, you know, kind of, you know, that is how I'm looking at it. So this is, fortunately, you know, we're going to go into a bonus round here. We're going to keep the video going for the archive and the show because I really want to get on tape and in the archive, we got an extra 8 minutes here we can do. I want to make sure that we get the reaction from the prosecutors and how they did this. So we'll just go ahead and keep talking over the exit music. Now, Chris, go ahead and give us, I'll just bring this down. Okay, go ahead and give us, you know, what the response from them when you went to court. You go, where's the discovery? They didn't mention anything that they deleted. It didn't even come up. They're just like, show up in court, and you get there, okay, I'm here, and then what happened?
Well, I was actually fairly surprised. You know, I go into the back room with the prosecutor, and they also had a member of the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority. They allowed to have some sort of say in how they dispose of matters that take place at the Meadowlands. You know, we start talking, you know, they're reviewing discovery as well, so we're going over everything that did. They're like, well, what's your stance in this matter? And, you know, I just wanted to get a feel for ultimately, you know, I'm feeling them out. If they hadn't returned any of my calls, I don't know what their stance is going to be. And I'm like, you know, Matt's a good kid. He's very passionate about what he does. No prior criminal history. And, you know, what are you guys trying to do with him? And they're, surprisingly, they're both like, your client has some balls. That was their statement. They're just like, the balls on this guy. They're like, it's really amazing. And they're like, you know, we reached out and subpoenaed the NFL security to get their stance on it, because technically they're a victim to a degree. And they were just like, well, NFL security doesn't want to push this. And you know what? We don't really want to push this any further. So
they actually said that. Those are the words out of their mouth?
I'm paraphrasing. But yeah.
Okay, but I mean, was it before the judge, or is that was private counsel?
This is all in the back room. Okay. The prosecutor's a little office there. You know, in actual words out of the guy from the NJ Sports Authority was, man, the ball's on your client. And he just shook his head and kind of smiled. So, you know, we're just having a fairly casual conversation.
Yeah, they want to get, how can we take this and take it from my inbox and put it in my outbox? How fast can we do this?
That's pretty much what it was like. And they're like, they're just like, we'd be willing to issue him a municipal ordinance for disorderly conduct. It's $500 fine.
And you go, no, not guilty, I want nothing.
Well, you know, my conversations with Matt, ultimately, you know, he was facing 6 months in jail, and my position was, they, you know, if you want to push this thing and make a thing out of it, you know, we would have got a new court date, there would have been trial, we would have had subpoena people, and, you know, the court could take that out against them, ultimately. You know, when he's telling people in the media how he actually got into the Super Bowl and that he knew he had an invalid pass, like, that's not something that you can suppress. It's not like I could file a Miranda motion and say, you know, let's get rid of this statement because he's voluntarily giving it to third parties. So, yeah. I mean, he could have made it political.
Okay, so you get before the judge. You had to go, all right, we got a deal, or it's a deal. And they go before the judge and they say, judge, here's the deal, or did they already have already talked to the judge and they just wanted to give a little nod and a wink and whether it was acceptable and the judge went, okay, done. I mean, how'd that go?
Honestly, I'm not sure the conversations that the prosecutor would have with the judge beforehand. You know, I'm not privy to them. But, you know, they passed up the offer to the judge. We went before the judge. You know, it was pretty routine, mundane procedure. You know, he just said, you're pleading guilty to an ordinance. You understand your rights. You know, Matt advised him he did, pled guilty, said $500 fine, or, you know, $530.
So it's not even a misdemeanor, it's a nothing.
Not
it was,
even a misdemeanor,
you were speeding.
An ordinance. So, you know, it's like in New Jersey, you have municipal ordinances. It could be a noise violation. It's a township law.
Okay, so,
you know, noise violation.
Yeah, but it's on his permanent record along with video from everything else. But, you know, the thing is that here we have, he goes through all the security of the Super Bowl. He gets up on live television. He gives his whole spiel, and he's like, you know, I win, all right? He gets off with, you got, you know, like nothing. You didn't have to do a whole bunch of work. All this built up and stress that he had, you had, it's all right. And I guess we're done. Okay, and you guys called me right before you went into the court, and I was, I was involved in something. I was like, okay, this is what we want to do. We're going to get y'all to just know that we'll, you know, raise the money. We'll get something. Just kind of, we'll make woohoo out of this. I got backup for you. You know, a very experienced criminal defense attorney that can do federal cases all around the country. He's ready to go. We're sitting here on the edge of our seat. Let's go play. Yeehaw! And then you sucked it away from me, okay? But that's all good. So now all we have to do is cover you guys' costs and everything is a couple thousand dollars, and we win. That's it?
Yeah, people can donate if they want. You know, obviously they don't have to donate. They could always...
they can donate! I say they must
donate. They can always subscribe to me. They can subscribe to me on YouTube. It's Mills Most, or they can donate. Or they can write me a message. You know, I really don't like begging for money, but I did have to.
No, this is $2,000. We have to encourage. For $2,000, you know, we get where we encouraged an individual to, you know, express himself and the truth and go through all you did. I mean, just sitting there for 3-4 hours waiting for the game to begin because that's how you got in. Okay, well, I guess I'll sit here for a while, you know, in the freaking New Jersey cold. I mean, seriously. You know, this is like, it was like cold, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was cold.
So I'm going, you know, this, I mean, just for that, it's worth a couple of $1,000 and a friend from high school, an attorney comes to your aid and doing needs, get a little something. So, and he got a little notary. I mean, it's all good. It's all good. And a lot of the guys that see on the other side there, they're like, hey, man, some nadules, you know, this is kind of, hey, you know, maybe the American people aren't as stupid and as docile as we thought. I mean, this was a win on all cylinders, and I want to help. You know, because it's just out of a sense of justice. So Donna's right now setting up the account on our funding center. Now we have we're going through a lot of changes on the site. We're making the shift in about a week and a half, too. It's going to have a totally different look and format. We're going to be pushing that. But what we're doing is that in the funding center, this feature that we have, we're just through beta on it, and we have the ability to put this up for you to raise the money. So Donna's going to use this as an opportunity for us, you know, say, hey, you know, this is the kind of thing that we can do. It's a couple thousand. Who gives a crap? And so go ahead and stay on the line. I got to get to my next guest. Donna's going to go ahead and set this up in our funding center right now, okay? And I'm going to leave it up there until we get $2,000 to you, however long that takes. Hopefully, I don't know, by the end of the day. But the point is that, I mean, it'd take a week, 2 weeks. I don't care. That's not the point. The longer I can put it up there, better. So she's going to go ahead, help her out. And I guess we can let Chris go because I know you're like an attorney and got like, you know, business and stuff. So what we'll go ahead and do is, Matt, if you'll spend some time with Donna, she'll get this up now and we'll promote it a little bit and make sure we get this taken care of. It's an investment to encourage others to keep doing this kind of thing, because if you're not rewarded for making this kind of effort, you know, it just doesn't happen. And I am shocked that there's not a big, giant, you know, 9/11 truther, you know, ad hoc meetup committee of out of New York freaking city, no less, that hasn't come up with a couple of thou for this anyway. Somebody explain that to me.
Yeah, well, I don't know. People have been asking me, where can I donate and stuff like that.
Well,
I
here it is. Okay, yeah. There you go. Next. All right. So Donna's going to set this up. By the end of the show, she'll have the link for your thing on this, your account there. We'll go, because it goes straight to you. I don't even get it. Doesn't even come through me. I don't say I don't care. You know, all I get is that, hey, somebody sent it to you, good, done, we raised it, and it's over. So you send this out to all your guys. Here it is, and it goes straight to you. I never even see it. Okay? So go ahead and, well, was that recorded, the bonus? Okay, so she started the next hour. All right. I got 20 seconds. I got to get going, Mir. But go ahead and stay on, will you, Matt?
Okay.
All right. Donna will take care of you right now.
Good to talk to you, too.
Yeah, Chris, you know, it's always good to have a friend, help a brother out, and hopefully it wasn't too much pain, but we'll get you a little bit of money here because we love you.
Hey, Ernest, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
It's been real. Good job, guys. Wait. Brett Vernant wants to say hello.
Oh, I just want to make sure everything is working okay. Am I at the right distance from your microphone?
Okay, I just thought he'll give you some props here from School
Sucks Podcast.
Oh, props.
Yeah, props from School Sucks Podcast. Of course. That goes without saying.
All right. Hey, thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, take care.
Those of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear! No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here in Declare. Your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU to Phil Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Brett Vernant, School Sucks Podcast, School Sucks Project, School Sucks. You know, I got that shirt. I wear that a lot. You know that.
Yes.
You know, this is, I'm always at, you know, some event and everything, and I'm like, oh, what shall I wear? Let's see, School Sucks. You know, I'm going, yes. You know, where might I wear that this week? Let me see, oh, maybe the Prepper Fest kind of thing. You know, I'm saying, oh, what's Ernie think? Well, let me tell you what I think. Okay, Brett Vernant. And he comes, it's always good to see him. We'll give him the tour here in between hours or whatever and go see all the goodies. And, you know, I'm glad to see him. I want to see him say, hey, but he'd bring beautiful women around with him. That's good. You know, go ahead and introduce your lady friend.
Oh, this is Michelle, and she was my primary reason for this trip to Arizona. You being number two.
I can see why.
You being number two. So I'm really excited to be here. This is super impressive, this setup that you have. I see you have a monitor that's just dedicated to a picture of me, which is fantastic.
No, that's what's being broadcast on Next News Network over there.
Oh, see, you have multiple pictures of me.
Look back over there.
Oh, wow.
Man, you're a rock star.
I'm flattered. Whoa. I'm very impressed. This is such a cool setup, and I've only seen one room so far. So, I'm flattered that you have pictures of me everywhere. I think this is great.
Oh, that's Donna. You know, she has a file just for you.
Oh, that's terrific.
She's got the Brett Vernant, the old altar.
That, yes. That sounds great.
Okay, so this is, you know, we get to spend a couple hours. Good. There's a lot of people, you know, from New Hampshire have stopped by. Well, we had the Freedom Summit, so some came then.
Right.
And we had some others stop by, and then you come by. I'm going, what, are you guys cold or something?
The difference here is unbelievable. It's so beautiful here. It's so, the weather is so perfect.
Yeah, and nobody believes me. You see these big trees out here and stuff?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going there, like 60, 70, 80 foot trees, and they're going, how the heck do you go? I go, water.
Yeah.
You have water desert, it grows, man. You know, I'm going, they're going, God, it's like, what is this, freaking Illinois? You know, I'm going, well, he tried to do that. I mean, you know, but this is, yeah, Phoenix. Is this first time in Phoenix?
This is my first time anywhere within probably 800 or 900 miles of this area. Yeah. The only other place, the closest I've ever been is California.
Okay. So this is my question to you.
Yeah.
You know, do you see why we might want to stay in Arizona?
Yeah, absolutely. I see. Yeah, especially just leaving. I was delayed on the way here because of snow.
You know, we had people that were canceling the Freedom Summit 2 days before they were supposed to be here.
Yeah.
Because that's when I knew how bad the weather was.
Yeah.
Because they go, it was like Wednesday, they go, I can't make it to the summit. You know, right. I'm sorry, we got to bail. And I go, why? Well, they cancel my flight. It's not for 2 days. What are you talking about? I go, look, there's all these people sleeping in all these airports all over the country. They have another storm coming in. Mm-hmm. They got to clear those out. They're not. Heck, I mean, you're lucky that you're at home. You get to stay there wherever you're at, you know, because you're going to be sleeping in an airport, you know?
Well, here's what I'll say, okay? Like, you're real into self-sufficiency, personal independence on multiple fronts. Don't you think the snow is kind of like a good training ground? Like, you learn to deal with the snow first. And then, like, you know how people wear those little weights around their ankles when they jog? That's like what the snow is to us. You know, we have to conquer the snow first.
Yeah, we got to conquer the sun.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
You know, when you see all this dual survival or survival man or survivor, you know, they're out in the desert. I'm going, yeah, blah, blah, blah. That guy, you're not going 120 degrees. You're not going 20 minutes without, like,
You know, you're right. They usually are in the desert. They're not in the snow.
You know, they should do more snow stuff, but I'm just not that worried about the snow.
People, you know what the thing is? The snow is a little grim because people often wind up eating each other in the snow. You know, you've got Alive, the plane crash. You remember in the Andes, the soccer team from Uruguay, they ate each other. The Donner Party, they ate each other. So snow does bring out the worst in people.
So New Hampshire, just cannibals? Yeah, you know, it's like Campbell's up there.
Not yet. We'll see.
I don't know.
It's not that extreme. So, but it's you know, the snow.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You enjoying your? How long you been here?
I got here yesterday. Well, what's yesterday was Monday. Well, today's no. Yesterday was Tuesday. I got here Monday night.
When are you going to leave? Never.
After your party. After that weekend, yeah.
Okay. Oh, so you're gonna come Friday?
I will.
This would be awesome for you. You know, this would be right up. You know, this is. I tell you what it is. They did this a year ago called the Prepper Fest AZ.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a guy that Tony Tangelos has a weekend program, one of the local radio stations here. It's, Prepper something. They don't like that word, Prepper. You know, they want to call it, I don't know, something else.
Because of Doomsday Preppers, the show on television.
Yeah, they just don't like, you know, prepared something. I don't even know.
Right.
I don't
right.
know. So what they do, it's a gun show without guns.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, right. It's like you'll have all. Of course, here comes the media, and they don't show all the self-sufficient aquaponic water purifying food kind of, you know, cool ham radio transmitting the kind of neat stuff.
Yeah.
They wait. Look, there's a gas mask on the corner. All the media cameras run over. Look, a gas mask. Oh, they're crazy. I'm going. You know, that so doesn't matter. They get all worked up. I can't believe that they would do that, and we should ban people having, you know, like camo here. So I'm going, God, you guys don't get it. You're assuming anybody watches their crap anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. So this will be, maybe, you know, I can get you in if you want to go down there and help a little bit. Just, you know, show up and be somebody.
Just show up and be somebody?
Well, you can go, I'm Brent Vernott, look at my shirt.
So that's a great motto, show up and be somebody. I like that.
You're going to be somebody Friday.
How long is it going on for?
It's like Friday, Saturday, Sunday or something. I mean, it's a thing. It's at the Coliseum, the main, you know, fairground, whatever. Used to be where the Suns played back in the day. So it's just it'll be fun. But I don't get all worked up about it because, you know, I didn't have to do the work today. You know, later today, we have some help. Gina and I are going to go down there and set up our dome. Mm-hmm. You know, they gave us a place. Got to have the dome. Got to put up the dome. We got a place for your dome.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I enjoyed the dome.
So it's really popular. Oh, you haven't even seen our thing out here. We get to the break. We'll go out and show you my Aquadome.
Awesome.
The Aquadome. You know, this is, and we'll give you a tour of the whole spiel here, but, you know, I'm really excited about you seeing all the capacity that we have, because you'll see, I don't know if you saw, well, usually the duplicators are over there. I'll show you where we got all the DVDs just waiting for the project we're going to do and kind of whatever. Brett and I had talked with Larkin Rose, God, a year or two ago, or last summer or so. I was really excited about doing the Defending Archimedes project. And mm-hmm. we have different things coming together. And Larkin and Josie had done their first video kind of for this. And I kind of go, well, that's really more for a another, instead of introducing the video of everyone, that's more like its own thing that should be promoted. Josie the Outlaw was born.
Right,
and
yeah.
I go, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Man, don't even let me bother you, Lark. You just keep going. You know?
Right, right.
I tell you what we've done. One of the things that we're doing with the Funding Center, we're getting through beta here, working with James Babb on his project, and it's like funded. I mean, he's got thousands of dollars that we got in there, but a lot of it was in direct Bitcoin or cash or something that doesn't show up on the thermometer thing.
Right.
So
right.
Tiger's off doing some stuff on the site and everything, but we're going to get that thermometer up and that's funded so I can start, okay, we're through beta, we can start putting the other guys up. One of those, you know, is Defending Archimedes. We're going to get Authoritarian Sociopathy and get Larkin funded a couple thousand dollars a month.
Let's talk about that
2016.
That Defending Archimedes. Yeah.
Because I need him there for Defending Archimedes, School Sucks Project. All this is Generation Next stuff. And that's what Brett and I are going to talk about. How much ass whipping we're going to be doing. Oh, there's a shirt.
Yeah.
That's my, I
spot
that
the spelling
shirt.
Mistake. That's a proof.
Oh, the. Well, I'll find it.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
She knows what my wife has to put up with, and she's over there trying to do producing, and I'm like, we're back! You know, and I'm going, oh my God, we can stop. Okay, so what we're going to do is, and go ahead and tell the story of how you guys know each other. I mean, you came out here to visit her because why, other than the fact that she's so beautiful?
Well, I don't know how much I want to. Just to be quick, we started talking through the usual channels that people talk through today online, and we started to get to know each other and liked each other very much. And I was long overdue for a vacation.
Well, how long have you guys been communicating?
Oh, going back over a year, I would
wow.
say, but not. Starting more intensely just, a few months ago. You know, and more regularly.
I am very interested. Go up on this mic. I want to ask you something.
Ernie.
Real quick. Okay. Because this is unique here. I mean, so tell me this. That's the only question I want to know. Did he meet all expectations?
he exceeded all my expectations.
He's such a nice guy.
He is so nice. He's amazing.
You know, so the thing was is that, you know, I'm interested in how a relationship, it's kind of, you know, who's got the more pull? Is he going to move to Arizona? Are you going to New Hampshire?
Let's do one day
you guys
at a time.
Aren't engaged yet?
No, we're going to do...
You've been here a whole day, man.
It's a one day at a time kind of thing.
All right, I'll let you off. The thing is that, you know, there was, this was the point that Claire Wolf was making when it was the, they were doing the Free State Project. I don't know. You know who Claire Wolf is?
I don't. 101
Things to Do Till the Revolution. She was like a popular libertarian, you know, writer in the 90s. And she writes for Backwoods Home Magazine or something like that. She does. We publish some of her articles in the magazine and such. And so she was very influential when I was young and still is, but she used to write a lot more. And she was critical of the Free State Project. She was saying that, look, it's called cyber community. I mean, you're going to find people using communication. It's going to happen anyway. And then you'll get in the, you know, cyberspace, and then you get the meat space, and it'll have, don't limit yourself to where, you know, just the people that moved to New Hampshire kind of thing. I mean, this is, it's an intellectual connection. And then she was, I'm sorry, what's her name?
Michelle.
Michelle, I apologize. So Michelle, she gets exposed to, in one way or another, she's probably freedom-oriented or school-oriented or something, and then she's going, hey man, what he said, and then you guys actually start to have a connection, you meet, and then it's like boom, then what happens? I mean, you see that there's, we're going to take it to the next level, and we're going to keep talking to each other for another day, you know, they're not kicking you out yet, and I got a room back there for you, you never know.
Okay,
but the thing is that I find that the connection intellectually, how much does that translate into when you actually meet? Is it a disappointment? Is it still there? Do you know from a year-long, long-distance communicating, this is the first time that I've actually, someone that I've known has had this kind of relationship build either online or phone? Tell us about that.
Here's what I'll say, okay? I've been in lots of relationships going back, you know, into my 20s for the wrong reasons, you know? Not really, just maybe a lack of self-knowledge and choosing people for the wrong reasons. And, then I was in a relationship for what I thought were all the right reasons, right? Like, oh, this person, you know, and I see eye to eye, so everything should be fine. But just because things look good on paper like that doesn't mean it's going to translate into, you know, the perfect relationship. So, it you never know. I mean, what's going to happen? It was very nerve-wracking to, you know, to come here and meet a new person like this after having this connection online. But so far, Ernie, I do have to report that things are going very, very well.
Oh, so. I'm really happy for you that you and for me, because you came to Arizona. Okay.
Now I'm not staying here forever. I mean, I do still, I am paying for a place.
You visit, it'll infect you. You're kind of, I remember the night. Then of course you're here in July, and that changes. But yeah, you know, the you know, which is why we're like, can we go to Pork Fest? Let's go to Pork Fest.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some summers that we've traveled and we'll go spend a week or two up in Washington State, or we'll go here, or we'll go there, and you go, hey, I missed most of the 120 degree weather. That was good. I'm glad. So I can see having a home in two places. I understand, you know, the elite in Roman days, man, they were up in the mountains or they were down. I mean, you know, the people have always been willing to do this. They would like to do it. And now, because of the standard of living that Americans have, oftentimes they can.
Right.
And I'm going, okay, so you don't have, even the poorest of the activists, they go, hey, man, you know, I only got to hitchhike twice a year.
Sure, yeah.
I'm in New Hampshire. I'm in Arizona. So we had, during the Freedom Summit, we had Pete Iyer. I told him, I said, hey, man, give me a couple days. Yeah, I just need, you can do whatever, just give me a couple days. So he came down and we went out and I showed him what could be done in the desert. We had, you know, guys living off grid. I wanted to show him, you know, all the different opportunities there were, and just to get an idea what's possible here, what kind of life you could have here. All you need is water. And it just, you know, a lot of people don't know, Arizona is like number two or three in citrus production in the nation. Mm-hmm. They're number one in cotton. They're number one in lettuce. They're number one, you know, you're going, what the heck? Are you agri-? I go, yeah, our state symbol is like mining and agriculture and cattle. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, we use the earth. Why? Because we got oceans of water underneath us, no matter what they tell you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going, there's a lot of opportunities here, but it's a cultural thing. And with the school project that you have here in Arizona, this is how our kids got out and we started homeschooling when our kids were like kindergarten to third grade. The law is that you must inform authorities that you're going to be homeschooling and send out the form of the whatever, and it didn't specify how that was done.
Right.
So I went the first day of school, you know, by April, May of the year before, I'm like, no, we're done. No, we're done. So my oldest is in third grade. She didn't go to fourth, I think. So I go down to the office. Oh, Mr. Hancock, hey, how you doing? What's up? Oh, there's four kids. Man, we make some bank on this guy.
Yeah.
And I walk in. I said, can I borrow that pad? And they had like that little pink while you were out pad thing.
Yeah.
And I take it and I turn it over and I go, to whom it may concern, the Hancock children will no longer be attending government schools. And I signed it, handed it back, walked out, never went back.
Yeah. Okay.
That was it. Now, a lot of states are not like that.
Right.
So
right.
I'm just like, you know, here in Arizona, I just FYI, I'm just throwing it out there. So you know, Arizona's really easy.
Well, this is the other thing. People have always asked me for advice about this, and I said, you know, there's a lot of variables. And the reason why I bring this up is it sounds like here there are not a lot of variables. But even where they do want to keep a closer eye on what homeschooled or unschooled kids are doing, there's a lot of variance just from district to district and even from person to person. You know, like I remember working with a homeschooled boy who had some challenges, and there was no way he was going to follow the school's curriculum. But the guy I was working with was just like, all right, well, you know, whatever you're doing, just try to translate it into what we want him to be doing and you'll be fine. So they were willing to work with me in New Hampshire. But people, if they're thinking about doing this, should really know the laws in their states and do their research.
And it's different everywhere. Yeah. But how it got to be that way here, culture, the people. In charge of the legislators.
Interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when we come back. Brett Vanon.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Oh, here I am. We just made it. I came back. I go, the Ernest Hancock Show. I'm going to run and get on the air. Okay. I was taking Brett out to him to, you know, go see the laboratory. Got to, you know, can I do the 4-minute, you know, tour of that? So he got to see that. We just made it back in time. We were like 3 seconds late for the.
Oh, all right. Great.
Okay. Let me finish the explanation on that.
Yeah, sure.
All it is that I take the carbon nanotubes, or they, you know, the kind of the fuzzy, the velvet that I put onto these ceramic kiln posts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we plate nickel into that because it's very porous. Like if I'm plating a sponge, or let's say it's like steel wool or something like that, and you just kind of, you know, need the right metal or chemical, or you just want surface area. That's the big thing, surface area. When I did that, and I got, I mean, I was able to do that like a year ago. I mean, with, you know, within a few months, I created my first battery cell and tested it. And I go, oh, this is awesome. Well, what happened was there was, you know, big advances in that. And I didn't really have to focus on it so much because my goal was not Ernie's going to become rich and making all kinds of, you know, nickel iron nanotube batteries and they're going to save the planet and kind of, and that was never my goal.
Yeah.
My goal was to demonstrate that it could be done. My goal was I didn't want the dot mill, whatever the guys that were doing this nanotube were going to get a government contract to make and then it's patented and you're not allowed and it's carbon. But right. I'm going, I went through this before with the space race kind of stuff, and all I wound up with, the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, I got the same freaking space shuttle. I'm going, seriously? You know? And they're going to do the same thing with this technology. Because I knew it was coming out back in the early 90s. 1991, Popular Science, they were talking about buckyballs. So I understood and raised my sons, you know, understanding it was materials, and my kids. They both work at Honeywell Aerospace now.
Oh, really? Wow.
So I'm going, ooh, I see the future. I have grandkids. Where are we talking about? Great grandkids. Yeah, we get these guys done. It's all about the childrens. All right.
Yep. Yeah.
So this is what my whole thing was, inspiration. It was the inspiration of the Lovelution. It was the inspiration that we provide, you know, free space. We help people. We encourage them. They go, you know, video bomb the Super Bowl. I mean, it's pretty, for $2,000, I encourage him and everybody else to do the same kind of they didn't die.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an investment. I'm all over it.
Right.
So when you and I have talked over the years past about what you're doing and why you're doing it and how I want to help, there's a reason why. Because I understand the power of inspiration, imagination, and the answer is always freaking yes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You do that with the young kids, and all of a sudden, what happens? You're going to change the world.
I hope they just, it seems like the best audience for this. It's very, once people are over 30, 35, 40, they're, the concrete on their reality tunnels hardens and they don't want to let new stuff in. It's, you know, it rocks their world too much. But somebody who's young, you know, college age, mid 20s, teens if possible, ideally we'd be reaching kids in their teens. They have open minds, you know. So
I tell you, when they start to shut them down, it's junior high. When they start through puberty, that's why you got social.
That early?
Oh hell yeah! That's a. When do you think they do the Hitler Youth stuff? When are they putting the little brown uniforms and ties and have them going Sieg Heil and stuff? When are they turning in? When they're doing the DARE program? When are they doing social studies? When are they doing history? When are they doing government? And when do they make the separation between elementary and high school? It's when they're going through puberty. It's, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, 13. It's right when they're going through puberty, junior high. Why do they have junior high? Because that's when the big time indoctrination starts.
Yeah, well, junior high does seem to be this period, this very dark period in our lives. I mean, I'm speaking from my own experience, of course, but, you know, I was old enough to know that I was going to be an adult and I wanted to start to assert my independence and my will, basically. But there was no light at the end of the tunnel. It's like you'll fill out worksheets 35 hours a week while we don't pay you to do it, you know? So it was a very... It's interesting that you say that, because 13, 14 are really the prime ages for learning. It's when we are the most open and the most able, studies have shown. But we're trapped, you know, changing from gym class and playing dodgeball and filling out worksheets and carrying heavy backpacks and eating bad school food and with really no power. And we don't have the language. We don't have the language to express how painful that is, because I just felt like, oh well, too bad, this is the way it is. I didn't know that it ever could be different. This is, everyone goes through this. This is what way it is. Yeah, it sucks, but that's life. So you're right. I mean, I think that's a very interesting point that you make, that that's the age, right? Because that's when we are most able to learn, studies have shown, as I've said, 13, 14 years old. But it's our minds are still malleable, but who has control of them at that point, you know?
You know, if you can convince a 12-year-old that he owns himself, oh my goodness, and a parent kind of confirms it.
Yeah, sure.
And kind of builds up towards it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you just got to break the cycle. So when I'm talking to my wife about even us having children, you know, 20, whatever, we'd be... This August, we'll be married 30 years.
Wow.
Eh, I win. No, 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 no. So what happens, though, is that we're going, hey, we want to have two and two.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to ease in and out of high school, college kind of thing. We're going to get the grandkid thing. And now we're already talking about, you know, great-grandkids. Why? Because she goes, great-grandkids already? Holy crap. And this was a couple weeks ago. And I said, of course, look, we're on a good trend here. These grandkids, they're awesome. They got awesome. We raised parents to our grandkids so we didn't have to be parents. So what does that mean? That means we get to do the grandparent thing. We get to be, you know, kind of more patient. We get to be, you know, parents get to yell at them. I get to give them chocolate, okay? A little bit, one M&M at a time. So yeah, I go. So I'm going like, you know, this is, we get to start raising our grandkids to be parents to our great-grandkids. I can see by breaking the cycle of all this status crap, you know, that they're going to take these children, put them into their school system, grind them up, and the hamburger comes out the end with whatever seasoning they put on it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We're going to sit there and go, what happened? Well, I know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Okay? They took their they stripped the imagination from, they stripped the initiative from, they stripped, you know, fill out this form, do a worksheet. And I'm going, no, 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 no. So you're talking about, when you say things like unschool, define what that means.
Well, I mean, it's the opposite of school, which is education, you know?
No, school, it's kind of like a fish thing. They put them in a group. I go, what even a weird word they would even use that?
Well, yeah, it is interesting. And you know, education means basically to lead out, you know, and that can be interpreted to lead out of darkness or to lead out what internal strengths and gifts a person has. But schooling is, and the term unschooling, unschooling was invented. It's a retronym for schooling, obviously. Like schooling, once all these things were identified, that what it was doing to people, the negative effects that it was having, unschooling or deschooling, it could be called.
Unindoctrination.
Yeah, I mean, unschooling and deschooling both imply that a person has had some exposure to school, and that needs to be corrected. So it is unschooling is basically how adults learn, you know, like even people who are total supporters of the government school system, they would agree that the things they know most about and the things that, you know, in their life that they do, whether it's hobbies or you know, some kind of vocation that they really enjoy, they probably taught themselves how to do most of what they know, or they at least took the initiative, or they made the decision. It wasn't something that somebody else put into them and said, this is what you'll be. You know, so we learn through unschooling. We decide we want to learn something, and then we teach ourselves.
No, you got to take an aptitude test, and they tell you, ditch digger. You qualify for ditch digger. You're a ditch digger. You know what I did when we were building our restaurant? We did all the tenant improvements, and I wanted to do it on purpose. I mean, I think we saved money, maybe a little bit. But we did the inside electrical, and except for the actual hooking up. No, I ain't doing that. You guys, you know, I'm not touching that. But plumbing, digging the ditches. Our kids, they were like junior high, you know, some of them, the boys. And I go, you know, we took them out of school. They went to a private school, and I go, what are you doing? One, none of your damn business, but I'm going to have them dig some ditches, okay? And they go, good. They were cool. They were like, right on, that's good. And I go, yep, damn Skippy. All right, they say, you know, go to school, be a ditch digger. He's going to know exactly what that means. So, but he got paid some money. 13 years old, man, he was the best 60-foot, 4-foot, down, foot wide. He had to put in a drain pipe, freaking ditch digging. And now...
That's the most excited I've ever heard anyone be about.
Oh, what? He learned! I don't want to do that!
Did you know that Free Aid is a mutual aid, educational, and networking organization? At Free Aid, we support volunteers who provide first aid. We do outreach to the public about health and safety, and we bring together medically skilled freedom lovers. Free Aid is made possible by your generous support. Donors can receive great gifts, like first aid kits, t-shirts, silver dime cards, and hoodies. The Free Aid Silver Dime Card Project is sponsored in part by Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Freedom's Phoenix, and Don't Tread on Meme. Visit fr33aid.com.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? There's no voices can be heard.
The world just got better because we're like in the same state. Okay, so one thing I want to do, we ran the break. We got most of the, you know, tour done and everything. We did a run. And we got to see everything. And we got a couple acres here. And go, right, look over there. Look over here. So you can say you've seen. Okay, why? There are 25,000 DVDs sitting out there blank. I say, you see these? You see these duplicators out there? You see? Waiting on you now. So, yeah, Brett, you see, I'm serious about this, man.
Yeah.
So what? But this is what the plan was. I could see it was years ago. I got defending Archimedes dot and everything, you know. And the project was, I could see where this was, you know, coming down to. It was coming down to where you can make the most change is before they indoctrinate and turn you into the walking dead of the status something.
And really, I think you can catch people while they're being indoctrinated, too, because
a lot of times, especially.
I refer to the title of the show as a soft sell, right? A soft sell is when it's easy. Like, hey, did you know school sucks? Yeah, you know what, sir? I have noticed that because I'm there 35 hours a week. So once that doorway opens, we have a way to share all these other ideas. You know, once we kind of are on the same page about school, oh, well, do you know why school sucks and all of these other ideas that are connected to that? So I see that as a prime age to reach people. But really, the other part of it, too, Ernie, is I really wish when I was struggling and I was, you know, 14, 15 years old and, you know, I didn't feel like I was very smart or I didn't feel like I was on a path to much success in life, that somebody would have, that an adult me would have appeared with this message. But it never came. So that's what we're trying to do for kids today, because it is just terribly discouraging. It's such a trap. And I want to help people hear that. And it's obviously it's a lot easier in 2013, 2014 for people to hear that than it was for me in the early 90s. And that's what are you looking at? What are you doing over
there? Okay, let me show you what's going on.
Okay.
While you're talking here, I remember one of the things that we did is this. It was when QR codes, it was 2-3 years ago at Pork Fest.
Yeah.
There was a young man there, Ty. I don't know if you remember Ty. He's Ty.
Are you trying to say Asian?
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of where he was from. I think he's
not too far away from me. I feel like Vermont, but that's not right. No,
he's up in the Northeast up there, and
somewhere
I
in New England. I think.
I think he
might have been in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Anyway, so Ty is he does video animation or something
yes.
for something.
Yes.
And I was trying to talk to him about that, and we were talking about QR codes and how that was coming in to
right.
be in vogue and what that could be used for. And boom, it dawned on. I go, oh, here we go. So we work with Liberty Stickers, and what we did is we created, and I'll show you, you know, all these QR codes for various different things. So we had to generate how to do it, we had wallet voting, we had how small it could be, and then you have this big giant, the size of like a door, and it has all these different size QR codes. And what I was looking for is I think we had one that was for school sucks. And I'm pretty sure that we did. There was free domain radio. We had Adam versus the Man, total information awareness stuff. We had all kinds of different things, you know, Cop Block, Free Talk Live, Free Aid. And what we did is we took these, and then we did some for Occupy and different things. I mean, we just really made a use of this QR code on stickers that you could put inside bathroom stalls. You put it on the gas pump. You know, like we had... Alma had this great idea. It said, silly status, taxes are for slaves. Okay. So I'm going, if you put that on a gas pump and you're sitting there for 3 minutes filling up your gas tank, what are you doing? Silly status, taxes are, okay, I'll blip that. And you go, what else are you going to do? You're sitting in the toilet and you got the door closed. It's right there. You got a QR code. What are you doing? Okay, blip. I'm sitting at the bus station. I'm parking meter. You see my point?
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
we said, what would we do with the school kids? Oh, man, as part of the DVD, the little sticker, it has School Sucks Project on there where the QR code goes straight to your whatever, and they put it on their binder, on their locker, on their bumper, on their car, on their... And it says, and School Sucks Project everywhere!
Right. So one of our big challenges, and this is such a great idea, because one of our big challenges as far as the monetization of the show with merchandising is our target audience has no money. You know, so we really lacked things that we could do as far as spreading the message that we could deliver for free. But you solved that problem, you know?
Yeah. No, I tell you the other thing.
Yeah.
Tim Fry from Roberts & Roberts said, you know, man, he'd love him some Brett, okay?
What do you mean by that?
He likes your pie. He likes the concept.
Right.
I tell you what he was doing. Roberts & Roberts, I remember, this was years ago. We should get Tim to call in. You know, what he did is he had a school that was next to where his office was.
Oh, Tim
was.
Is the silver guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gave me a nice cash donation at Pork Fest a couple years ago. I remember
him. Of course he did, because he loves you.
And I think he gave me some dime cards, too.
Okay, now this is what he did. I don't know if you remember this. They built a McDonald's between his office and the school that was next to them. It used to have a field between them.
Yeah.
They put the McDonald's there, and the drive-thru went right by, and he goes by his window facing the drive-thru. School Sucks podcast, he put in the window there, so all those kids from the school going through the drive-thru saw that.
Yeah, yeah. So other people have told me that, too, that they live, like, on a school route, and they'll put, like... They'll put it in their window.
And you're not making the signs with the QR code that goes to and the Bitcoin, give me money, kind of been... This is exactly what Defending Archimedes is about, to promote that and all the other stuff, but I'm not forcing it. I'm just going, no, these things happen in their time. It'll go, it'll get you thinking about it. You come to Arizona, you see the capacity we have here. Ready? I'm going, when you guys are ready, we'll get it going on.
Well, I'll tell you about how I've been getting ready. I was actually down in Connecticut. I don't think I've told you this. I was down in Connecticut from August until about the end of October with Richard Grove and Lisa from Tragedy and Hope.
Yeah.
And we worked together. And during that time, I started thinking about, I've been encouraged to write a book. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not crazy about the idea of doing it, but I wanted to start seeing if it could be something I could get motivated to do, or something that I could do. And
once begun, half done.
And I was going back through the Underground History of American Education by John Taylor Gatto,
mm-hmm,
to say, all right, well, what kind of a story would I want to tell, and where would I have to start, right? Because I'm like 3-4 years into
the beginning.
I'm four plus years into the podcast at this point. So could I wind my mind all the way back to what I was telling people at the very, very beginning? Because my head is filled with so much. So I started going through this process of, you know, what is the beginning? And that kind of speaks to what would I want to communicate to 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds. So I've been thinking on it a lot over the course of the last 6 months. We wound up putting out a video series from the Underground History of American Education, taking this somewhat obscure book and turning them into mainstream YouTube videos. And that was pretty successful. And it allowed me to develop my video skills. So this is much more realistic for me now. And
I tell you what the big hurdles are always. It is, one, just getting started to begin with.
Yes.
Having kind of a vision where I'm going to focus my whatever.
Right.
It have a long-term effect. And then, but how would I this, and how would I that, and how would I, you know, so we always took away those hurdles. Okay, well, we got a printing press.
Yeah.
Oh, we can do the t-shirts. Oh, we can do the duplication. Oh, we have the software. Oh, we have the website. Oh, we have the funding center. Oh, we have the marketplace. Oh. Done. Next. Wait on you now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm at a point where I'm ready to move forward with merchandising, right? But so here's my problem, right? I'm waiting for designs. So I send out to all the people in my audience, hey, if you have graphic experience, send me something. Now, I can do graphics kind of, but not on anything that's going to be printed. You know, I can do graphics in an emergency. So if I just learned how to do that myself, I would be selling shirts, right? So it's, and there are methods, Ernie. There are methods that we can talk about, not only for learning better, but for doing better. And we've got plenty of time, so maybe we can get into that.
Another hour with Brett Benoit. Oh, and we can go bonus, too. We can do whatever we got to do today. We're going to do it. Oh, can you feel it? Can you feel it?
I certainly can.
Can you feel it? I feel it. Bad guys, being bad. You know, they're just being bad, and we're going to be good. How do you beat bad guys? Usually you just ignore them, and you do something else. Over. Yeah. With what? Generation Next. There's always a Generation Next. So who are we going to have help us with that? Brett Benoit, School Sucks Project. Yeah, I want to help. Defending Archimedes. Who's that?
I don't know. The geniuses of the future.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
You're listening to The Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates, online at thelibertybeat.com. This is Justin Armon.
And this is Jessica Armon.
Here with your Liberty Beat for March 18th, 2014.
Gold opened today at $1,353, silver at $20.72, and Bitcoin is trading at $605. Support for the Liberty Beat comes from Soleil School, celebrating the uniqueness of each student in a peaceful and creative learning environment. Now enrolling children ages 5 through 9. Visit soleilschool.com. And now the news.
On Sunday, hackers brought down several websites related to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. These hackers claimed that the distributed denial of service attacks were meant as retaliation for NATO interfering with Ukraine. NATO's main public site, NATO.int, was hacked, as well as a NATO cybersecurity center in Estonia and NATO's unclassified email network. As the public begins to question the actions of the CIA regarding spying on the Senate Intelligence Committee, members of the Senate themselves are divided. Speaking on the Senate floor last Wednesday, Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia said he believed a special investigator should be assigned to uncover what extent the CIA was monitoring the actions of the committee. Senator Chambliss, the top Republican on the Intelligence Committee, stated that he would not take sides in the matter until the facts were known. His comments came a day after Senator Dianne Feinstein broke her silence on the controversy. Feinstein stated that she felt the need to speak out after seeing a number of misleading media reports. She has been quoted here, "I have been trying to resolve this dispute in a discreet and respectful way. However, the increasing amount of inaccurate information circulating around cannot be allowed to stand unanswered." The Intelligence Committee recently discovered it was the subject of monitoring by the CIA while working on completing a report on U.S.-supported torture programs. A CIA official shot back that the committee was violating federal law by possessing a classified report on detainees. The Obama administration continues to set records that will cement this presidency as one of the most secretive in United States history. According to an Associated Press analysis, after 5 years in office, the Obama administration has doubled the amount of times information was withheld when requested via the Freedom of Information Act. As Americans learn of the spying program conducted by the CIA and the NSA, requests for information are on the rise. However, in the last year, the government cited national security 8,496 times in order to keep information from being disclosed publicly.
You're listening to The Liberty Beat for March 18th, 2014. Be sure to check out the website at thelibertybeat.com.
After decades of believing that saturated fat leads to heart disease, a new discovery proves otherwise. The Telegraph reports that researchers at Cambridge University have discovered that saturated fat does not cause heart disease. This study shows that doing away with fatty meat, cream, or butter is unlikely to improve health. A new joint report from the Center for Investigative Reporting and The Guardian finds the modern process of rehabilitating toxic sites inefficient and costly. According to the report, while poisonous materials are shuffled between treatment plants, harmful waste simply continues to multiply. Algerian authorities are cracking down on protesters, deploying large number of police to make arrests and preventing demonstrations in the capital. The move comes ahead of the upcoming presidential elections.
NASA's recent discovery of water on Mercury has led to speculation among scientists that the planet could potentially sustain an intergalactic space prison housing the universe's worst criminals. Scientists believe that organic compounds found on the planet's surface could be useful for creating an off-world space Australia, where strength is the only law. However, they caution it is too early to say whether or not fights among the space jail's prisoners would be broadcast here on Earth for the entertainment of wealthy gamblers. But NASA's lead researchers do say that Mercury's ability to support human life raises important questions about who the prison guards would be.
Perhaps the guards themselves would be space mercenaries, or maybe we'd just use robots.
The robots would have guns for hands.
Well, obviously.
Critics inside NASA caution against funneling too many resources into the Mercury project when it would be so much cooler to build a prison on the moon ruled by clones of the prisoners themselves. Researchers encourage the public to read their findings, which have been released in the form of a graphic novel titled The Mercury Cipher.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make
laughing. You know, I'm just like, the future's so bright. You know, and why? Because, you know, there's people that get it. They get it. You can say, oh, I want to go. They get it. You get it? I get it. Get what? What does that mean? Let's ask Brett. Brett, what is it? When they say, I get it, what do they mean that you get it? What do you get?
Oh, well, it could mean so many things. There's so many facets. There's so many facets to all of this. And we should try to ally ourselves with people who get different parts of it. Now, it, I think... Let's put a definition to it, right? I think that's personal liberty, okay? But this is, you know, I say on my show all the time, state fights a war on all fronts. They've got all it has all the bases covered, right? So we need to defend ourselves on all fronts and try to find self sufficiency and freedom on all fronts. So, you know, I have a niche, education. It might be different from other people. Some people choose political action. Some people do. Then there's people like you who apparently do everything. But, you know,
it looks that way.
It does look that way.
But it's not.
Okay. But you know how to outsource, too. And you know how to find other people who can help you. And you have this platform, which obviously helps very much. My platform has helped me. So I have something that I'm knowledgeable about from my personal and professional experience. And I have a skill set. And I put that to work to cover this base, I think, which is a very, very important one, schooling versus real education. So that kind of freedom is a very important one. But, you know, if there was an S hitting the F kind of scenario and food stopped being delivered, how long could people survive? That's another kind of freedom, health freedom. And, you know, there's people who want to be involved in politics. And there's multiple fronts, Ernie. So it can mean many things. But I think generally it speaks to personal liberty.
Survivor Max! Junior high kids, Home Alone against zombies. Okay,
can I see that? Let me see this.
This is Davy Barker's thing. This is exactly what you're talking about. You know, what is the whole point in that book? It was Pork Scouts. It was educated by libertarian-oriented New Hampshire kids. And then here comes a zombie whatever, which was, it was co. I read the book. He sold it, the publisher. He has three, you know, it's a trilogy. It's already sold.
Now, Davy is fantastic.
Well, there's some of your graphic art right there. We got Scott Beezer. Athena. We got all kinds of people to help you out, man.
He did a free piece of art for me that might even appear on your screen there sooner or later. He created, I said, I want a very esoteric private school crest thing, you know, that we could maybe make into patches and put on blazers.
Awesome.
And he had it to me like a week later. And I can't believe Davy has never been on the show before, but we started to talk. I need to open that correspondence again.
Survivor Max, you need to just talk about that book is right up with the, you know, the New Hampshire schooling, kind of where you think this kid learned all his stuff to beat up zombies.
Exactly. So there's lots of things that Davy and I could talk about.
I'll tell you what, be on my show he soon. Was at Liberty Forum, was it the year before last?
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, I want to write this, because he could see the zombie genre as, you know, he's kind of a fan of that kind of stuff anyway.
Sure.
So he was like, you know, I can use this. Yeah, it's, you know, kind of a political statement and who the bad guys are and how they think and that kind of thing. And what he was doing is he goes, on the plane, as he was going back to California, San Francisco, he goes, you know, there was a teacher, fifth grade teacher, sitting next to me grading papers on fifth graders writing their paper on zombies. Okay.
Yeah.
And he goes, are you freaking kidding me? I'm all over it. So he did it, and he wrote the book, and they buy it, and he sends it to them, and they keep up with it. So they're all excited to see their stories. And I go, only from a fifth grader are you going to get some of the things that are in the book. I go, which one? I go, definitely this one came from a fifth grader. He goes, yep, that was they did this and did that. So I'm going, only from the minds of a young, imaginative, unlimited individual are you able to get that. Okay, what's this? Richard Grove.
No, there's the logo that Davy designed.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we wanted it. He made it the bird white, and I changed it to red because I thought it was a little more, you know, why is this bird red? Is it a phoenix? What's going on? Is this some kind of secret society? There were questions.
What was the slogan there? It said what?
It says, well, it has the Trivium on it. He put three pillars for the Trivium, and then I think it says grammar, logic, rhetoric, which are the three parts of the Trivium, which also is very esoteric for most people. And then on a version that I designed, or a version that I enhanced or changed, maybe enhancement is subjective, but a version that he designed and I changed, I put school socks in Latin. So it was very, I thought, yeah, I wanted to get, I do want to get them printed as like badges that could be ironed onto blazers.
Yeah, you get embroidered, or, you know, you could do different, you can do whatever you want, man. And then we could technology.
We could get a bunch of people to Bitcoin. Wear them around an event like Liberty Forum, yeah.
All right. So this is, I mean, you have, what's your overall plan? What's the big plan? You got big plan, really big, what?
Really big plans.
Very big. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I tell you, okay, let me tell you this, Brett.
I'm trying to think. Go ahead.
All right, well, this is what happened. I'm at the Freedom Summit, and a lot of the guys, they see this. I mean, it's not like we, live large. I mean, it's IKEA and, Walmart press board kind of, they take my, fold out table, plastic, I don't care. I mean, I put all my money in the electronics and the activism and that kind of stuff. Because they take, they're going to do what? Take Terra? I mean, I don't care.
So, right, yeah.
So what happens is, we really focus on the future. There will come a time when I'm kind of, I just want to chill and grandkid thing. But this is what we do. And the thing that I'm looking at is how big an idea do you got? And they go, Ernie, how do you get support? And we want support. And I want to do this one thing. And how would I get funding for? And I go, Mario, I could put you up on the funding center and do it. What's your idea? Well, I want to write a book. This, I want to do that. I want to talk about. I'm going, it's not big enough.
Yeah.
I go, No. You're not trying to change the entire freaking culture of the planet?
Well, let's start here.
Until you do that. I can take my time and do that.
Well, I say baby steps. Now, there was a great comedian from Boston named Stephen Wright. You probably heard of him. He was a little dry. He, just to familiarize people, he's the guy who's the radio DJ in Reservoir Dogs. It's that very kind of that voice. He had this joke one time. He said, I make small goals in order to achieve larger ones. So maybe I'll get up in the morning and I'll make some toast. And maybe that toast turns into a sandwich. And maybe that sandwich turns into my own space program. Right? Now, the point is that we can only should strategize and set goals based on where we are. And then when those goals are achieved, we can re-strategize. So when I started this, originally what I wanted to do was I wanted to make a documentary film. So I wrote a treatment. Treatment is like 4 or 5 page synopsis of the story you want to tell. And I started pitching it to people who had either, film or television production credits. And the feedback that I got, and this is a story that I've told several times on my show, the person said, you should watch more Michael Moore. You probably want to be more like Michael Moore. This is over most people's heads, and it's kind of, this is very controversial, so this wouldn't work. I mean, there was a time where I was naive enough to think that I could make a film that would, win an Academy Award. It's like, oh, thank you so much. We were so confused. All we were lacking was the information, and now you've provided it. I used to think that adults were open-minded like that. Through experience, I learned that that wasn't the case, and people like Michael Moore for a reason. People like having their intelligence insulted like that for a reason. So at that point, I had to re-strategize. I had to first think smaller and think about how I could get a running start to maybe do some of these things. And we've kind of been able to raise the bar of goals several times along the way. And when you said, what's the big plan? It's a difficult question to answer because the
change
plan is going to change.
Change the freaking planet.
Well, we'd like to get there. Maybe one day.
That's my goal.
Okay, so I'm trying to turn my sandwich into my own space program.
I want to help.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. and Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you, and please feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Now, we went over a bunch of stuff. I'm showing them different things and so on. And we're getting ready to push the next big project or whatever. He got a project. I'm ready to push the project. You know, what's the project? I don't know. Whatever he wants to do. You know? Because this is, it's all about exactly in his camp. This has been my goal from the beginning. All right? It's Generation Next. You keep hearing me say it, Generation Next. And I started explaining to Michelle, and we got distracted, is that in 07, when the Lovolution first started, imagine the people that were involved then. I remember. You know, there were young people. There were teenagers bringing, you know, mom and dad and, you know, and grandma and grandpa.
And here's the thing. There might be, I'll post this to my site, too. So tell my audience, the younger people who might not even know what Lovolution is, tell them what that is.
When Ron Paul, you know, created, God, what do they call it? Exploratory Committee.
Yeah.
January of 07.
Yeah.
That was right after the November 06 election cycle. If you were to Google still voting with a question mark, still voting,
yeah,
and you Google image, you'll see the graphics. They're up there. You see where it says still voting up on the glass, up on the desk there? And then on the left one, you'll see the Lovolution logo. Those stickers were also big signs, the still voting one.
Mm-hmm.
That was voted the most popular sign that election cycle. They're like, woo, you still voting? I'm running for Secretary of State. I'm going, you're still voting? You know, seriously? You guys don't get it? And that's 06. So V for Vendetta, that kind of thing. Well, we had a space in the way the vinyl was. I just had this open little space. And I said, I saw that Lovolution thing on the internet from back in the Beatles and whatever. And I said, yeah, let's do that Lovolution thing. I like that, you know. So when we did that, everybody had to have that. They wanted it on their laptop. They wanted it on their cell phone. They wanted it. It really meant something. You know, we want a revolution, but a peaceful. We want to put daisies in gun barrels, okay? We're not looking for a violent whatever. So when Ron Paul, he had already spoken at two of our freedom summits, you know,
yeah,
before.
Yeah.
He spoke in Manchester. We went there. He spoke here. And then again, after the love, I think it was 9 or 10, he spoke here. They had a car, Ron Paul 2012, and he's out there signing it and stuff. You know, so we do. Yeah, we're going to do the Ron Paul speaking tour again. Okay, here we go. But what happened was that January, when he said he's kind of sort of thinking about creating a blue ribbon panel we might run someday, I go, oh, I already knew where this is going. I'm going, Ron Paul, Lovolution, you watch what happens. Immediately, we went and opened up a shop for 8 weeks. We just started mass producing those signs, send them to all my libertarian friends around the country, and just send me the raw videotape. Now, we started making our first YouTubes. We never even said one word about policy. Didn't have positions or no. It was just Ron Paul, Lovolution. This is how to make the signs. Why? Who's this guy? Don't care. This is how to make the signs. Well, what are you going to do? This guy, I'm going to your meetup. I go to, you know, the Carolina, I go to California, I go to Oregon, I go where all over the country. Said, this is how to make the signs. Well, they should say, I don't give a crap. This is how to make the signs. Express yourself. But this is what I found out. It was amazing to me, the fear of just taking a piece of vinyl or plastic or Tyvek or whatever and zip tying it to a chain link fence. To do that is like you didn't get a permission slip from the man to give a finger to the man.
Right.
And I go, But these young kids, it was all the teenagers, and they're going, yeah, I thought you guys were here to like put up signs. You're not putting up signs? I thought you were going to make signs. You know, so I'm going, who are the sign makers? Well, most of the people, you'd have the, you know, the older Republican types and so on. They were there. It'd be 100 people. And out of 100 people, there'd be 5 to 10 of the young people wanting to make signs. I go, don't worry about it. I'll be over tomorrow. Because I'd come in like Wednesday or some weekend thing. Right? I didn't coordinate through the campaign. I just want to know where he was. We're going to go do, I'll show you some sign making. So we do that, get the signs up, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, and started exploding.
Right,
it,
yeah.
It hits South Carolina, one of the debates. The Granny Warriors asked for some signs. Just send, I go, give me a draft. Boom, done. Within a couple of days, they had a whole big giant, you know, pile of box of signs. They went and started passing them out, and it hit Fox News and exploded. And there was never a doubt in my mind. That was the beginning of the Lovolution. And the Lovolutionaries that we got, it was the concept that was iconic by that logo that made them understand that it was revolution with love. And that appealed to a lot of people. What did it mean? I let Dr. Paul define it. He did a great job.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, it's all good. Don't worry about it. Now, what happened was, I sure as hell, and no, I'm not, you know, you never saw me say vote, Ron Paul. That didn't happen, okay? I'm like,
right,
you're
right.
Still voting?
Right,
you know?
Right.
So what happened was, it's a cultural thing. That's where you come in. It's you, because I remember in those days in 07, teenagers, it's young, what are they now? They're their mid-20s, got kids and a school debt that no job to pay it off.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
So what, and then we got the next generation next and next and next and next, and all of a sudden, where's all the marketing go? It's a, you know, Daily Show Jon Stewart crowd. You know, they're worried about, hey, those under 35, those under 40. Those are, that's the market. That's the future. That's it. It's not your dad's Buick anymore. Buy this new Lincoln. Forget about all the other crap GM used to make. We got new stuff now, maybe. Okay.
Right.
I mean, you know, so they're always getting the new guys. It's always a new, but with the internet, there's a bunch of history there. That's where you can come in. And, but where do you direct it? To the freaking kids. It's Defending Archimedes Project. I'm going, you need to get to that 11, 12-year-old so when they get in front of them, the mandatory youth indoctrination camp leader up there says, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You want them encouraged. They just go, they're on their iPhone in the back of the class going, hey, and 20 seconds later, I call BS on you, lying sack of snot. You don't know what the hell you're talking about anyway.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I mean, it's difficult to... I've thought about that, too. I actually had Kevin Soling. You know Kevin Soling? He made the documentary War on Kids. You've heard of the War on Kids?
No.
Well, you know what's going on.
War on Kids, Donna. Go get it. Put it up on the archive. Done.
All right.
War on Kids. See how you did that one?
Yeah, yeah. So,
please.
He caught a lot of crap from my audience because he was encouraging kids to basically do civil disobedience in school. And I don't think that we would need to encourage young people to do that if they... absorb. I don't even want to use the word absorb because it sounds too uncritical. If they accept this message, I think that that would happen naturally, and they would make the decision. It's very, you know, it's always very
that they
touchy.
They own themselves. If they not, who does? When do they get to be an adult? You know, it's like, oh, at 18, the state has granted that I am, you know, is that when it is?
Well, the history on that is very interesting because, you know, the idea that if you were like a... 120 years ago, you were very much an adult. Adolescence.
Hell,
is,
you probably had two kids.
Yeah, you might have. You might have. The people who wrote that great history series, Will and Ariel Durant, that big 12-volume history of the world, that famous set of books, they got married when they were teenagers. She was like 14 years old. That is horrifying to people today that such a thing would happen. So childhood through the school and through the state and the culture and really through the progressive movement in the early part of the 20th century, it artificially extended childhood. Today, I mean, the ultimate progressive goal is to make people children of the state their whole lives. So, you
openly.
Know,
and?
Exactly. So the invention of adolescence happened in the early 20th century, and it was a smashing success because that takes it from mid-teens to late teens, and now a person isn't effectively an adult when they're like in their mid to late 20s.
And when was this really supported, and by whom? It was the unions.
Kids
were freaking competition, man. We can't have child labor.
It was unions, yeah.
Our restaurant, we had for years. Our kids got, you know, the state and the federal wage and hourly kind of work. Where are their children? What was it, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? Got the guy with the neck. Where are the children? I go, they're mine. Bite me. Okay? You know?
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
No roads! You know, what is there? I don't know. There's, transportation people can get around, and we don't need permission slips. You know, this is... See, telling the stories, talking with Brett, You know, he starts to understand from our history, you know, of raising our children, our grandchildren. This is what all this stuff is about. It's not me. It's for them. I would tell we go in campaigns and so on. They go there, they come up to me and they say, you know you're never going to get that black robe to say this or politician do this. I go, and you're not going to. I go, wow, man, you guys don't get it. It's not me you got to worry about. It's my children.
Mm-hmm.
It's my grandchildren. I'm setting up in kind of the cultural kind of thing going towards this and kind of. You have no idea what's going to happen because they're going to be free up here. They're just going to know you're bad. Freedom, good government, bad. Bad, they're bad. You know, government's bad. You know, so I'm just like, it's so obvious. And what I wanted to do is create the network, the platform, the ability to be able to share this and have a little touchstone to kind of, so I don't have to fill in all the blanks. I just know who the people are filling in the blanks, like Brett over here. So I am, that is my goal and resources, time, effort, fun.
Yeah.
Activism, you know, all this stuff is set here for you. For you. Are you starting to feel it now? You feel me?
I'm definitely feeling it. This is very exciting. I'm very energized. I anticipated
waiting on you now.
Yeah. Well, I'm busy. You know, I am
know.
Busy.
You're doing your thing.
So, yeah, I feel like there's lots of things that have helped me in the last year too that I've tried to share with my audience. You seem like you're getting a lot done here. For sure.
You know, a lot of it is because I don't take on a lot of projects. Or, you know what you should do? I go, add that to the freaking pile. And you think your should's going to be ahead of my I think I should?
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know,
yeah,
seriously.
Yeah.
I go, wow, somebody should create a site that has, you know, like tens of thousands of people with interest and money to fund. And somebody should create a mechanism for you to have your own special. And somebody should create a magazine and a newspaper. I even told you about the newspaper. We got, you know, should create. Oh, yeah, I already did it.
So let me ask you a question, though. How do you prioritize? How do you decide what is it? Is it just
infrastructure?
Okay.
It's a funding center. It's the marketplace. It's all. It's infrastructure. It's being able to serve our own videos. It's being able to have the archives of your shows. Everything. I mean, all this stuff, you know, is there. Why? Because it's a hurdle for a lot of the projects to go international. Do you have a translator in there? Do you have the ability to have your own whatever? You know, I go, yeah, all the stuff that you're like, you know, oh, if I only, there it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if I, there it is. Well, that one more, there it is. Okay, what's your excuse now? See, I got to eliminate the hurdles so you can get down to, do you really have the passion for this? And you do, you know, so
absolutely,
I've always been supportive of, you know, anything Brett, you know, I'm like, you know, here we go. So that's why I don't force this stuff. I know in time you've learned some more video skills. You get to hang out with Richard Grove, another, you know, I'm a fan of.
That was
a
very life-changing experience.
Yeah, Richard's got skills, man. The boy's intelligent, too. He was supposed to be a speaker at this year's Freedom Summit, but he had to cancel because he had to move his facility during that time. And then, but who, the, like the next day comes on and says, hey, well, I want to be at the Freedom. I had him on the air and he heard the commercial. He goes, well, I want to be on. I go, we come back and you commit, you're on. Patrick Byrne, Overstock.com.
Wow. Yeah.
That's how he came on. He took Richard's place.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, well, that's like an even trade.
And he just spoke at Liberty Forum too.
Yeah.
Patrick Byrne. Yeah.
Well, the, I am very, you know, I don't think, did he actually make Liberty Forum? I thought he missed that. He's going to go to Pork Fest or something.
Oh, I don't know.
He was on the list, and I think they got confused with the time and freedom. So, anyway, so he's going to go to Pork Fest. You know, he didn't make it there, I think,
cool.
But Carla said. And then but he is going to go to Pork Fest, so another reason to go to Pork Fest, Patrick Byrne, chilling. And he's one of us.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the kind of guy, I don't know if you know this. He and I have had private conversations and certainly on the radio. And in both of them, certainly the last one that we did or the second. Anyway, we've had him on for years. Patrick, education.
Yeah.
He's part of, he's like spokesperson or he's something to do with the Friedman Foundation on education and so on. And he has his own plan, education. He'd be your new best friend. It's always nice to have a gazillionaire as your best friend.
I agree.
I think you should get him on. Donna, send Brett the contact information for Patrick Byrne and encourage them and CC his scheduler on, encourage them that he needs to talk to Brett because Ernie said.
Okay? Done. Great.
Done.
A new best friend. How exciting.
Next.
It's not
wait
every day you get a new best friend. So I'm looking forward to that for sure. I'm I just want to reiterate that obviously I'm very impressed by what's going on here. And that was, you know, this was one of the struggles that I had for a long time, because you're kind of like a hub, right? So people are always bringing ideas to Ernie. And I'm probably like that on a smaller scale, where my inbox is filled every day with do this, do this. Somebody sent me a script, actually, for yesterday. Somebody sent me a script that I started looking through last night for a parody of this band Bossy. Are you familiar with the Ban Bossy campaign?
No.
We can talk about that later. I won't get into it too much now. But so I have this script that's something we could shoot here with your equipment Friday night. We could do it probably in an hour and put it on YouTube and maybe have a viral video. So we could talk about that and see if that's something you want to do. But
if
anyway,
you want to use this equipment, I mean, you see my equipment. I got the equipment.
You've got everything
we
need.
Look at that bad boy set up, man. Rock and roll and the light and system and all the people here. And you can do it in kind of your... We are... Changing podcast interview, big name, do it.
Done. Absolutely.
Done.
So,
waiting on you now.
What happened was, I, you know, would get all this stuff and I would make these commitments that I couldn't keep, right? Like, I didn't have that shuffle off box that you spoke of. So I would get my hands way too full with stuff because I just imagined that there was endless amounts of time. So one of the things that I would suggest to the people listening is checking out this methodology for workflow management in a stress-free way called Getting Things Done. It's a book that David Allen wrote. We did a series of shows about it called Presence and Productivity. And not only has it helped me not maybe get more done, but get better stuff done, it's also reduced my stress level considerably while doing it. Because, you know, this idea of freeing the world is very appealing, but we have to be free ourselves first. And we have to be free from our bad habits first. And, you know, I think a lot of
that is free in the world. See,
you're right. But that's something that people have to do, and they have to learn
your world,
how to do it.
That's right. Let me tell you how you free the world. You know, that individual, that his world is freed.
Okay.
Next.
Okay, yeah, and then kind of scale that.
Well, you know, once it starts, I mean, you know, they go, well, you'll never, and how are you going to, and you're not, and I'm going, you guys have no idea what's coming. When the Lovolution hit and did it, there was never a doubt in my mind.
Right, so one of the things
Next.
Stefan Molyneux says that I've said that Richard has said is that you have to make people want what you have, right? So you can't look like a stressed out, maniac, paranoid, angry person pursuing these ideas. And that if you want to look like that, you should go be involved in politics, because that's what politics is all about. So you have to find the things that you're passionate about, right? Yeah, next, exactly. You find the things that you're passionate about, and then you pursue them, and you do it publicly. So, I mean, I do the things that I want to do. This is what I realize. It's like, oh yeah, this is why I do this. Is because I like the way this makes me feel, and this gives me control over my environment, and that should be appealing to people. Like, it's appealing to sit here and watch you do this because you're having a good time.
That I know how to be free to live the kind of life that I want to have is to advocate it for everybody.
Right.
See, that's the problem that they have. You know, it's always, well, we need to put our guy in charge so we can have it the way that we want it, and screw you and our majority beat up your majority, and our collective versus your collectivism, your collective against collectivism, and we got a collective, you know.
Sure.
And then we took over the marbled columns of and the ramparts and our pitchforks and torches, and now new guys with guns and pitchforks and torches are in charge.
That's
and yay.
Historically accurate.
So I'm just going, you know, I go, why are we doing that? It's a revolution between the ears. It's a recognition of self-ownership and trying to get people to understand the value of them growing up to be self-sustaining human beings that doesn't violate others' a pursuit of their happiness. I mean, it's all this basic freaking America. They promised me stuff.
Right.
That's why
this
show is Declare Your Independence, because it didn't say what kind of government. It's just when to recognize when it's bad. If it's not defending individual rights, time to alter or abolish.
Right.
That's it. Didn't say you were going to have a constitution, Democrat, Republic. That was like a decade later they played that game. You know, Art Hamilton, and we rule you now.
Like, yeah.
Yay. You know? No,
also,
but it's a constitution,
also historically
really
accurate,
But we ruled you correctly. We got, you know, these guys in the black robes, these government employees we got up there at Supreme, they say it's okay that we ruled, just ask them, they said so. Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's okay then. You know? That's the other way, Butler Schaefer comes in, which is amazing how many supporters, young people he has, you know?
Yeah.
So, and why? Because these concepts are so popular down to the individual.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Stop me, cause I'm having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by like Lady Godiva.
Okay, well, maybe not
gonna go
just like Lady Godiva. You know, Brett's naked over here, though. You know, as far as you know. That's one thing. Everybody's gone, I don't know. Do you wear pants, Ernie?
I don't have to.
Except when Brett comes over. Okay.
No, that's true. You know, that's one of the nice things of having some professional freedom is that, you know, most of my best work is done with sweatpants on inside out. You
know? Just out of principle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that I don't like to dress up, but if I have inside out sweatpants on, no one is going to send me home. You know, because I'm home.
This is, I mean, tell us about your show and how it's, because it's around your vocation. I mean, you're actually, you know, School Sucks is a service that you provide to people. Let's talk about your business.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, I worked in education in a variety of capacities over the course of like a decade and kind of feel like I learned my way out of each job that I had. Like, I learned what the problems were. The more I opened my eyes and the more I could see, I started in a boarding school where kids were all wards of the state. They were heavily drugged. In the beginning, right out of college, you know, I was very compliant. I figured if somebody is paid more than me, if they're in a higher position than me, they know more than me and I should listen, because that's how I was schooled my whole life. So I learned my way out of that and then, you know, got a history teaching job and then saw the limitations of doing that and how I was going to get in trouble with the administrators of the school for saying certain things. So then I freed myself a little bit more and started working in private tutoring. But then they're like, oh, well, we have this contract with schools to do No Child Left Behind and you have to be an academic enforcer to help kids get good grades. So I'm just basically, a lot of the times, I'm an extension of the school. So then I move exclusively into SAT tutoring. But then I'm like, oh, well, I'm kind of, you know, doing the whole, this whole, you need to go to college
You're
thing.
You're cogging the machine.
Yeah, so at every stage in my career, I kind of like felt like I learned my way out of thinking that was an okay thing for me to do until there really wasn't much left to do. I still will do the SAT now and then, but it's not how I want to make my living. And, you know, the more revenue that I've been able to raise during the show, the more self-sustaining I can make the show, the more that can be my profession. Now, I'm not rich, but, you know, I'm happy and I'm very satisfied in what I'm doing every day, and it's on the right track. You know, I'm getting a raise every week, which is great. And as far as the service that it provides, I mean, I see it as something like if you've recognized that school created problems for you and you want to learn your way out of where you are based on what's happened to you.
Oh, my God, there's an enormous market right there.
Then this is a resource. And is the goal, because we were talking about goals before, am I going to take on the Department of Education? Am I trying to end the government school system? I don't think about it like that.
It's kind of like, you know, I want to end the Fed. I want to audit the Fed. How about just ignore the Fed?
It's not very empowering, right? That's what I always say. Like, people understand these ideas, right? They understand the philosophy of liberty. What's the first thing they say they're going to do? They say, I'm going to get Ron Paul, not raise awareness about Ron Paul's message. They say, I'm going to get Ron Paul elected president. I'm going to end the Fed. Well, those are high burnout operations.
Yeah,
who
freaking cares?
So you know, you have to start at an individual level, and I'm just trying to reach as many individuals as I can. If that, you know, if we reach a certain power or influence, then we re-strategize, and we've done that a couple of times.
You know, this is one thing that it had a big impact on me. There was a friend of mine that is 96. He was running as a libertarian candidate for president against Brown as Rick Tompkins.
Sure.
And he, and there was a long reason why we didn't want them to take federal matching funds. And it was a big deal and be all purists and everything out of Arizona. And I remember we were at a television station one time. He was doing an interview. And they asked him, they go, do you think that, really, do you think that you'll could be elected president as a libertarian candidate? And without hesitation, he goes, if I thought I could be elected as a libertarian president, why the hell would I run? And they right. go, and they're like, what? And then he explained, and it was made so much sense. He goes, if I lived in an environment that would elect a libertarian to the presidency, you would already have won. You would already have a culture that supported that. It would already mean, you know, then libertarians would be like out doing a job. Who the hell wants to be? I don't want to be a slave or a master of slaves. You know, I mean, why would I run? We'd be right. in a libertarian society. And I go, oh, so the goal really is to have the libertarian society. Then it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
So that's what's happened with the Levolution, the voluntarist, the movement, the free state kind of thing. I don't really like, you know, free state's like an oxymoron right off the bat. You know, I kind of like, you know, ew. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, you got to check that off the list. You got to say, can you have big impact in a geographical area by concentrating people and playing politics? Can you? I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out. You know, I mean, I think it's better not, I guess. I don't know. But the thing is that it's about creating a libertarian, voluntarist-oriented, understanding culture.
Right.
That's
yeah.
what makes the change and why so much comes out of Arizona. Because we were the young activists like these young guys running around now, 20 years ago. And we know the impact. We could see it change. They're coming to us. They're like, ooh, look at us. Look at us. Pay attention to us. You should run a story on us. We get kind of playing gaga. And I don't care. Okay? Because right. I'm looking at what you're doing. I keep emphasizing this, Brett. That's why I called you like years ago and hammering on doing this and trying to create and get you going. But man, I don't ever think that I ever forgot about Brett is going to be using School Sucks, Larkin Rose, Stefan, everybody. We're kind of, it's all done. I even got Glenn Jacobs, you know, as Kane, or Glenn Jacobs is going to be able on that Defending Archimedes project. He wants to use his influence to do this. So I'm just going, you know, this is really coming together. Waiting on you.
I'm ready.
All right.
I'm ready. You know, I've got ideas. And we
I got equipment, and I got access, and I got skills, and then we even got some little bit of money. We got, you know, here we go, but I'm not forcing it. It's when you guys are ready. And I tell you what kind of put the delay on it was the success of Josie the Outlaw.
And yeah, yeah.
You just keep going, because that was part of the Defending Archimedes project. In the disc would be all those videos. Now, what they originally did was a video to kind of introduce the disc, and I'm going, oh, hell, man, this is like a project on its own. I mean, holy crap. And Larkin and Josie, you know, they just took off. I'm like, hey, man, I'll just wait. It's all good. But, you know, I went to people, because when he left here, the Freedom Summit, he had a car breakdown. And it was a big deal getting him back home and taking care of family. I said, you know what? There's a lot of people. We got to take care of Larkin. I go, yes, we do. Why? Because I need that available resource to these kids of the most dangerous superstition
yeah.
to nip it before it gets there. That I need Larkin around. One less thing we got to do.
Yeah, a very simple book for those who are unfamiliar that Larkin wrote, where he makes this argument about how government is essentially just this, or authority, really. It's really about the concept of arbitrary authority. Now, there are legitimate kinds of authority, but it's never through force. You know, I mean, you could be an intellectual authority, but, you know, authority is kind of like a thought stopper, right? Well, I'm in charge. Well, I'm, you know, above you. That kind of a thing. So Larkin deconstructs that myth in the book, and it's so important to so, you know, it helped me. He was on my show.
Essential.
We talked about the book for 2 or 3 hours. And, I talked to Larkin last year about working together more, because he's a great speaker, you know, and he's got some
good ideas. Well, remember when you and I and he were talking at Porkfest,
yeah.
at that time, he had this program of deprogramming people. You give me 16 hours of them in a room and we'll do it, not get them, make them, you know, release their cognitive dissonance and come, and I'm healed, brother Larkin. And I'm going, you know, you can just do videos.
That would be, it would be interesting, though. How do you get those people in that room, right? Yes, I'm here to have my mind freed. I think the people who need it most, it's like...
get them when they're 12.
Yeah.
when they're, because what are they doing? They're mandatory youth indoctrinating them to whatever, here's a DARE program, and the man is bad, and yeah, he's your dad, and turn him in.
Yeah.
But we're good guys. We love baby seals and whales and crap, okay? You know, global warming. So I'm just going, you know, yeah, tell people in New Hampshire that. So I'm just going, you know, I am just so excited about, you know, but I'm not going to push it. I'm glad you were here. I wanted to show you the infrastructure that we have sitting here perched like Snoopy playing vulture on his doghouse, looking at his bowl, ready to pounce.
Right.
I'm waiting. Wait on you now.
Well, maybe I'll be spending more time in Arizona. So there's opportunities.
Yeah. See, you know, I sent Michelle.
What?
She's one of my agents. There's a trick. I got you here. Yeah, we've known each other for years, as far as you know.
Well, I'm sad to hear that, but I'm enjoying it so far. So.
No, we haven't. But it's good. I'm glad you got contact here. We'll get you, you know, spend more time here. We'll have some fun. And
cool.
It's nice to meet you, Michelle. Yeah, we'll be back. I tell you, you know, the one thing that we'll go into bonus time here a little bit because there's more planning that for those of you listening to the archive, you know, find out more of our plan. We'll spend a couple of minutes doing this. Then we got to get ready to get out to the fairgrounds and start setting up our Zoom. Oh, yeah. And they saw the Aquadome. That's it. You know, it's up and running. We keep adding more stuff. We'll talk about it. What?
Hold on. Do you want this off?
No. We can go for a little bit. Okay, real quick, let's go ahead and do a timeline on some of the plans that you got, because I want to make sure, you know, what we can do to help and kind of the next stage of you going back and doing, I mean, you need help on anything, you got skills you need, you need graphics, you got, I mean, what's your plan?
All right, well, we always need graphics. So the short-term projects are, we want to do a print run on merchandise, but obviously I would like to have it more customizable than, you know, a lot of the options are going through a third party. So I might have this, oh, I forgot to wear my third t-shirt. I'll have to wear it Friday because I need pictures of me in this free t-shirt I got from this t-shirt company called Third. They might be willing to do the designs. I'm real picky when it comes to design, so I haven't found too much I can use. But when I get a design, I want to do some printing for marketing purposes. I have endless amounts of printed flyers already, like boxes and boxes and boxes. So all that's all set. And then it would be, we used to sell just for the cost of shipping. Like, if you pay us to ship this to you, it's free. These activism kits with, like, bookmarks. So people could go to the library or Barnes & Noble and put School Sucks bookmarks in, like, education books or psychology, philosophy, stuff like that. So, I mean, all that as far as outreach is covered. My primary goal that has... certain aspects to it, bless you, is YouTube. I see that as the place where the young people are, and I am trying to formulate a campaign for how to reach more of them.
This has been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
I never count on anything or one or group else to do what I know I can do. That's why we did the freeway banners. You know, they're going, oh, well, you didn't get a permission. You're not letting me. Oh, you're confusing me with someone who gives a crap.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
First thing. The problem is that when, like, the still voting, the reason I did that was because as a campaign sign, they couldn't take it down. Mm-hmm. I just probably go, yeah, it's a campaign sign. Well, you guys, well, your name is really small. I go, so?
Wait a minute. What do you mean your name?
Oh, because when you do a can't see, it says on the top right, it says Secretary of State Ernest Hand. I mean, it's really small in the top right up there. And at the bottom, it says endorsed by Freedom's Phoenix and newspaper. That's really him. And that's his own. I go, yeah. Did you spell it right? Thank you. I mean, you know, they are so stupid. They don't get it. Of course, that's what I wanted them to say that. It's like,
right.
I'm just doinking. I'm just excuse for me to put up a sign. You can't take it down.
Right.
Now, the Levolution, they could take down. Well, and they did. But we would make hundreds of them and then put them up over the weekend. They take them down by Monday afternoon. We got rush hour traffic. We do it again and again and again and again and again and again. They're like, what the heck, man? These guys are not. We went straight to the people, made them go somewhere. School Sucks podcast or School Sucks project, same thing. QR codes goes to all the kids. You're handing out the DVDs, Defending Archimedes, kind of all this kind of stuff. Josie the Outlaw, you know, Glenn Jacobs, you know, Taryn's stuff, Davi's book, all this Larkin's thing. I mean, it's just going to be, oh, are you kidding me? Boom! And it's not so much, it'll have an impact on the kids, but more importantly, it'll piss off the administration. We will get more attention from this effort from the Arizona Education Association, the American Education Association, the industrial, you're not allowed and we don't like it because people, than the kids.
Well, let me ask you this question. This is a question I ask a lot in Keene, where I live, to people like Ian. What's the utility in pissing people off? Now, you have an answer to that question, but I'm wondering what it is because, you know, I
don't think it's who you piss off. See, the thing is that I'm not a big fan of, like, a minimum job requirement to move to New Hampshire is you got to get arrested. I'm just going, seriously? I mean, are you making these people your friends? Are they seeing that you're there to support them as individuals? Are you going? So, but my thing is that's why you take this Defending Archimedes project and you direct it directly to 11, 12, you know, 7th, 8th grader. You know, it's to them. Look, you own yourself. You do this. You do that. This is why. So, of course, you're going to have some parents that are going to be, I'm not, you know, real comfortable with that. Yeah, I guarantee the system is not going to like it. And they'll go, oh, pay no attention to the, you know, whatever.
So the question is, how do you win those people over?
I don't care. Doesn't matter.
Well, see, what I observed in Keene, and I want to put the problems out there because they do have solutions, and I don't know what they are yet. In Keene, years ago, Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live and Free Keene, and another guy named Sam Dotson from the Obscure Truth Network, they were going and they were doing these sine waves. As all the buses went by, they had these signs that said school sucks, and there was this just outrage from the school teachers, the school administrators.
Of course there was. And why?
But and the problem was because it was so offensive to them, they were able to turn the kids against the activists. And here's what the perception was, and this is just something like, it was great that they did that. It was a good thing to do to try and reach out to kids with that message, but the challenge, the obstacle is that
because
school teaches people to be passionate about nothing, that it teaches intellectual apathy and conformity. If you see somebody standing on the side of the road holding a sign, you know, the perception is that person must be crazy because they care about something.
No, my point is not
so
much.
There's an obstacle there that can be, or I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm just saying that there's an obstacle there that we need to figure out a way around.
No, this is exactly the kind of point you should bring up.
Okay.
I do not see the just saying school sucks as being anything other than silly status, taxes are for slaves, made you click the QR code to go to some place
to find out. Right, exactly. That's what it was designed to be.
That's all I see. It's not like I'm supposed to think school sucks, which it probably does, but that's not the point. The point is, made you look. I can make people look once, okay?
Okay,
now, they'll look again and again and share and everything if it's something of value. But I can always make you look at least once. Okay?
Right.
So that's what I wanted to do, look once. What would I use as the mechanism to create the avenue, the controversy, the commentary? And it's different here in Arizona because this is already kind of homeschooling. We already know it sucks already anyway. You know, but the what we would do is the DVD. As they're coming out, you know, because one, they don't have their own car. They're going with their bicycles across the crosswalk. Turn on the other side of the crosswalk, you know, share this with your parents. This is for you. Show mom and dad. This kind of da, 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 da. And you get videotape of doing like 100 kids or something, and you do it. We already got Pensacola, we're going to do it. Phoenix, we're going to do it. St. Louis, we're going to do it. New Hampshire, I'm sure, will do it. We have LA do it. Chicago do it. I mean, we already got places, people got out to do it. And what do I need them to do? You know, it's going to be 15, 20 minutes of kids going by and a videotape of 3 minutes of them handing it out. Done. Okay, where would you do it? I'm in Manhattan. It's a junior high, the prep school. If I got a blazer with the whatever on, well, you're wearing your school sucks blazer. And then you have, as you're handing it to the kids as they're going in the subway. You know, here. And you see it in Chicago, here. You see it in Pittsburgh, here. It's in Phoenix with the background of the Red Rocks, here. Boom, it's a YouTube. It goes out and everybody's got, what do they got? Oh, my God!
Yeah, the first time we did it was 2010, and there were lessons to be learned from this. We went to a movie theater on a, like, cheap night where it's all kids coming in. Now, you have to prepare yourself for certain things like rejection, silly looks, because that doesn't matter.
Don't care. I just want the YouTube.
Yeah, you're always going to get them. I mean, read YouTube comments. Now, most people won't behave like how they comment on YouTube in real life because it's completely unacceptable to behave that way in public. But, you know, people will look at you like, well, you're crazy. That's fine. Let them go by. They're not the person for you. And what I will say about that experience, even though we didn't know what we were doing, we were just handing out CDs. We didn't even have any graphics. We were just stamping them with the website. And that was all they had on there. Mm-hmm. They had no pictures. Because obviously, somebody's going to take, they're much more likely to take something that looks interesting, right? We didn't have them. So we're just handing out CDs in cases. They just say schoolsucksproject.com on them. And people were taking them and saying, school sucks. Yeah. So it worked until the police came and told us we had to leave.
No, that's part of the video.
Yeah.
You know, you're missing the point. I don't see the real have 300 million plus people in this country, and however many kids are going to be done by a couple thousand DVDs that we pass out. That's not where the change is coming from.
Yeah.
That is just the evidence of it being done. Once begun, half done, okay? You're just demonstrating that you're doing it. You're demonstrating the impact. You're demonstrating that they're going to resist. You're demonstrating they show their fear that a couple of thousand DVDs and you got the Education Association of we need to have somebody against kind of look, they're over there, go get them, there's freaking freedom or, and you just show just how they elevate you in stature because they're so freaking worried about what?
Right.
An idea.
Yeah.
A concept.
Yeah.
Defending Archimedes. We have the special edition. We have all the stuff that's in there. You list all these different things. You have celebrities that are up. Oh my God, you get, you know, Ron Paul's curriculum, De La, putting a couple lessons on and kind of in the book to read and John Taylor, God's link, by the, oh my God.
Yeah.
You see my point?
Yeah.
It's their fear of what's happening that launches it. It's not what you're doing, because you need to have that resource. Of course, that video and all that stuff will be online. It'll be on your Arsenal. It'll be on YouTube. It'll be on Vimeo. It'll be on Blip. It's already there. The artwork is there. The conduit's there. There's all these different programs. These people, they'll start subscribing to your pile. They'll start subscribing to the YouTube channels of, you know, Larkin and Josie. They'll start to get the Freedom's Phoenix logo. And the world is free! Why?
So, but the question, one of the important things, and this was my point, is how can we still reach out to those people, those likely candidates, the people who are likely to embrace this ideas, but also have strategies that not only address but quell fear. You know, like, how can we find the people who will find this message attractive, but also have some empathy for the people who, just from their own conditioning, are petrified? You know, there's guys, and what I usually say when I start talking to people about things, and I say, look, they're like, oh, I don't know about you. I say, listen, I just want to assure you, I am so much less of a threat to you than whoever the last person you voted for is. You know, and that because,
you know,
I
how
am,
I see
but,
it.
But I want to be able to factor that into the equation too.
I don't even worry about it,
because fear.
Because I tell you, it's a 13-year-old that brings their parents or grandparents to visit with Dr. Paul.
Okay.
It's the 15-year-old that brought their aunt, uncle, whatever, and they become revolutionary. It's a, you know, it's my brother-in-law that on his fireplace mantle has a picture of George and Laura Bush on his coffee table. He can't wait to watch Glenn Beck, Hannity, whatever, with Rush Limbaugh's book and Glenn and Han on his coffee table. That years later, finally, he calls me and says, you know what? I registered libertarian.
Yeah.
And he's the only guy that I didn't go to him and I say, and normally what I say is I go, you're still voting? But
yeah.
Him, I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, man, made a step, you know, positive step. I'm not going to, you know, diss him, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, you're still voting? I go, hey, well, good for you. Of course you did. I knew you're a good guy. You're going to make the right decision. It's kind of, you know, so, you know, later, you know, kind of, I'll see him this May, I think, and I'll be going, you're not still voting, are you?
Yeah.
So the thing is that I don't worry about them. I just be a good example. I would go there. He'd be, when we're taking signs, I'm doing meetings, I go stay with him in Norfolk, Virginia. And I, you know, visit with my niece and nephew, and we kind of hang and whatever. And he's like, when you go to your car, can you kind of like cover and not let anybody see that you got a Ron Paul Evolution sign? I just want my neighbors to kind of, you know. So now, I was at a speaking event, and a guy is sitting in a cubicle next to him. He's an engineer that does refurbing of the nuclear submarines. He was in the Navy, and he becomes an engineer, and anyway, he does that. Well, the guy that's sitting next to him was at that meeting telling him about this guy. He was, oh, it's so great, blah, 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 blah. He goes, should he stay in my house? That's my brother-in-law. You know? And he's going, really? Will you get some stuff? So I left him a bunch of Ron Paul Revolution mugs. And so he became the guy that's passing out this. I'd be all clandestine. I'm like, and finally he just gave it up. You know, I'm just like, well, you know, Glenn Beck's not that bad. He used to be at CNN, but then he went to Fox and he's okay. You know, and then he goes off and I'm like, you're killing me, man. I mean, seriously, this is the way you're. So I don't worry about them. If you set a good example, if you deal with Generation Next, if you start, you just, you know, eliminate the fear and show that they're so paralyzed by fear. And once they get over that, they just come on their own. I don't want to make them mad. I don't want to antagonize them. I don't want to go after them. I just want to ignore them. They'll come around on their own.
There's something interesting in the example you just gave, too, because when you talk about reaching more, getting more people who are willing and enthusiastic about sharing this message first, right? So we can have, it's an attrition thing, right? So you can have more people having one-on-one conversations where they're being somewhat sympathetic to what the other person is dealing with. You talk about this guy who's, trying to rationalize Glenn Beck. I mean, I'm pretty confident that I can sit down face to face and convince, if they'll give me the time, if they won't, you know, do fight or flight, in an hour and a half, I can get them to see eye to eye with me on a lot of things without being a bully, without being a bully. I'm very confident in that. But what happens is, Ernie, when we part ways and they have 2 weeks, you know, without exposure to this message, and they retreat to their comfort zone of the New York Times or Fox News or MSNBC, then it's Groundhog Day.
It's difficult to unlearn the truth, though.
Right. So we need, if more people were doing that, you know, if more people were injecting these ideas into more and more conversations, and the state's actually helping us, because more and more things are becoming political issues. And I was just saying this to Jeffrey Tucker. You could have a conversation 10 years ago about going to your doctor without it being a political one. You can't do that anymore. Now that's a political issue. You could have I could have had a conversation with my family last Sunday. Oh, tomorrow, do you know I'm getting on an airplane and flying to Arizona? Before
with my anal probe.
But that's what you bring up, right? Before 9/11, I'm getting on a plane and going somewhere.
Up down.
That was not a political conversation. It's like, oh, you're getting on a plane and then you're going to go in the sky and land and be someplace else. Oh, that sounds very nice. But today, what's the focal point of that conversation? The TSA. The government made it so. So the government is creating more and more opportunities for us to inject the philosophy of liberty without being forceful about it into more and more conversations. And that's an opportunity that we can embrace.
Yeah, a lot of people do it wrong. I see. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like all of a sudden they you know, listen to a sentence, and then I already know it. Oh, I need to walk over here. Or I try and rescue people at the parties or whatever, because here comes a guy, and it's like it's a Memorex commercial, and their hair's blown back. Yeah. The guy's going 9/11 inside job for a half hour. So I'm going, look, I don't look at it the way that they ask. Ernie, what do you think? I go, hey, man, I don't look at it the way most people do. All I need to do is ask one question. Can they do fill in the blank? Chemtrail, fluoride, water, food, whatever. Can they do something to maintain, enhance, expand their intrusiveness, control, authority over the individual to benefit them? Can they?
Yeah.
Well, then they are.
Well, I'll tell you this.
We wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong. You know, so I'm going, no, once you know that, it's all right. What's the counter to that? You know, how do you, well, you know, and then you take steps, you grow your own food, you try and create your own energy, you start to take itty bitty little baby steps, and if everybody did that to just a little bit, boom, because I don't think the state and the man and all these other corporate operate on that much of a margin. When we start, you get 5-10% of the people going, I'm good, I don't want to do that, I'll use my homemade soap, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they go, damn it, Johnson & Johnson's like, we got to kill the homemade soap makers or something, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just going, it's that simple to me. So I go, in the 90s, imagine this. How old are you?
36.
36. Donna and I were like late 20s, early 30s, early 90s, okay? We, you know, have little kids and so on. We're going up there like, you know, first grade, kindergarten kind of thing. And I remember talking there, and we spent 15 years just trying to convince people there even was a problem. Okay,
yeah.
So I'm going like, you guys don't understand. You know, I'd run for office, run for Congress. They get up, and I look at them, and they're like, well, we're in control. We have, and we buy our ink by the barrel, and we're going to kick your ass. And I knew I'm going, you guys are so done, you know. And I look at them, and I say, you don't understand. Our generation is just waiting for you to die off.
Well, that's true. And
they got pissed. They didn't like that. And now, okay, let me finish this point.
Yeah, sure.
I go into these same people, and I'm at a meeting. It was like in September. They're take off for the summer. And I come in, you know, and I lost a little weight then, you know. I'm kind of, you know, cut my hair short, kind of like it is now. I have my beard I grew, and it was gray.
Yeah.
They always saw me as you. I'm the young kid, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
All of a sudden, I show up, and they see me with a gray beard, and I'm in a tie, and then they went, holy, I go, yeah. And I stroked my beard, and I said, we're here. And they realized. I go, we're here to take over now. What, do you think I forgot? Mm-hmm. All those times I'm saying we're just waiting for you to die off. I mean, it's not like an individual. I'm waiting for you to die off. It's that philosophy to die off, that we rule you. You got to be part of the ruling class or you don't get. And it's our team versus your team. Vote for my team. Kind of we rule team rulers. And I'm going, no, you guys don't get it. And I go, oh, well, it's never going to really. I give you the Lovolution. When the Lovolution started, I would make it a big deal. I go, you watch what happens. The youth is going to take this generation next. They're going to whip your ass. And they're going, well, they, I go, yeah? How's that Republican Party thing working out? How's that working for y'all? How's it going? You got people, you wanted more Indians for you to tell what to do, and they all want to be their own chief. And you don't know, no, we don't want you to be a chief. We want you to be our Indian.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I'm going, you know, you guys are so, it's done. It's over. And there's so much evidence that if we just go with the confidence to Generation Next, using school sucks idea concept, that these young people, as they go within a short period of time, not only will they be your ambassadors, not only will there be people like Tim Fry that wants to help and do, and that people just like him and me will flood to accomplish this whole thing, and then what's the other side going to do? Anything they say or do just, you know, bolsters your position. I don't have to go up against them. I don't have to
debate them.
I don't have to worry about them. Screw them. I don't care. And I don't want to elevate them.
Yeah, and there's this separation, too, that's really important to point out, and it works to our advantage. The use of force makes you lazy. Having the ability to use force, like, if I could just walk around with my fists like this and just punch my way out of any problem that I had, okay, well, life would be easy. I probably wouldn't have very good social skills. I probably wouldn't have, you know, very good vocational skills, because I just punch, you know? Any problem that I have could just be solved with a punch. So I'd be kind of a useless person, and I wouldn't be really good or competent at anything. So, I mean, that's the state.
Yeah, you'd be a politician.
And we, the people who have to work our way out of those control systems, have I think, by and large, a creative energy, because we need it. You know, we need it because we don't have the advantage that they do.
It takes less effort to have a voluntary relationship where people want to do what they're doing instead of being compelled to do it.
Yeah, well, it's obviously not sustainable, you know, eternally. That, yeah.
Yeah, and as a soul, I mean, you know, that's one thing, you know, the biggest reason that I became friends with Adam was when he spoke at the Revolution March and gave that his first speech. And it was when he said, humanity marches on. That mm-hmm. one phrase right there is just, you know, a tear to my eye. You know, and he built up to that. Humanity marches on. When we, you know, challenge it, we do it with love. And, you know, it was a great speech. And the point that, and I really emphasize that one line because it had a big impact on me, is that, of course, throughout history, humanity marches on. Marches on to what? What was the march? More and more individual autonomy. When it came to communication with the printing press, when it came to communication with, you know, heck, written language, when it came to communication, factories, email, internet, the more and more you give people the ability to express themselves so they can have a School Sucks podcast,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that capacity, Wayne's World. What was that, 89 or something,
yep,
back in the late
80s? Yep.
You know, Aurora, Illinois, where Next News Network is coming out, and how ironic is that? That you're going from your grandmother's basement to the world! And I'm going, this is what's coming. And there's a whole bunch more of that coming. So I'm going, when that happens, what's going to happen? I don't know. But the bad guys do not like it, because it's not centralized, collectivized indoctrination of an entire planet. And right now, they're freaking out. Why? Because even if they get on network television, a popular show of whatever, everybody's TiVoing it, and they're not watching the commercials.
Right.
Yeah. So they got to indoctrinate you with whatever the message is. I like this a new series called Almost Human. It's like, I don't know, 50 years in the future, and they have cops that are androids with this one. Whatever.
Yeah, you got
like
a human cop, and he's partnered with an android
cop. Yeah, right. So like
cop.
Data, you know, he's a good guy. But all during this series is just kind of get you indoctrinated in accepting how much surveillance state they got.
That's what I figured it was.
Yeah. You know, I'm sitting there, and I'm going, seriously? I mean, but it's cool gadgets, and it's a lot of good, yeah, this is probably going to go to that. Yep, they're probably going to do this. this. Yep, they're probably going to do that. Yep, they're going to, you know, so I'm going, this is, but where's, do I feel a threat by that? Not really. You know, because, yeah, you're going to have all this technology is going to be used for, but it's going to be used for, you know, just us. It's going to be used for these young kids. They're going to have the next counter, too, and we get to communicate with and bite me because I see where the power, excuse me, where the power is. The power is a relay of information and perspective from every individual to every individual, and that will allow peer review for us to find our own solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Just the capacity to find our own solution, the capacity for us to go and move somewhere else, the capacity for us to share, to be autonomous, to grow, to have energy, the capacity to build and make our own shell, the capacity to print our own sneakers. I mean, the capacity. This is what's going to change. Humanity marches on, and the focus is where? I could spend 10 times as much effort on somebody even 30 or 40, where I can spend 5 minutes with at the right time with a young mind in seventh grade and expose, here's a QR code, silly status, taxes are for slaves, or school sucks.
Yeah.
And go to your site and listen to one of your shows and change an entire generation's life, which changes mine. That's why you are a tool that I'm using. You are freaking there for me to use. Get over it. Okay?
I look for that. Sounds wonderful.
But you see why I'm so enthusiastic about this.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
That's one big, giant, humongous less thing I got to do.
Right. No, but you're right, too, that just the leverage that you have, or, you know, the lever, that you can move a lot more, especially when you kind of look into the future with that 5 minute, or, you know, let's give it 15 minutes to the seventh or eighth grader who's open-minded.
If you ask Angel Clark, you got about 6 seconds.
Yeah, well, yeah, versus, you know, talking to somebody who's in
school
their
sucks.
40s
1 second.
Or 50. Yeah, that's true. And that was, like I said before, that's a door. Well, what is it, you know, that it means that it's okay for you to feel this way. Yeah, it's just like this cliched thing that kids say. I mean, that's why I named the show that, because kids I taught
used
to tell me that.
You were worried about the impact and the opposition you get from the other guys. Like, you got to engage them. My goal is not to engage them. I just know they're going to engage. And I'm like, but I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to them. But you're not allowed to talk. I go, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to them. But you're just supposed to. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to them.
Right.
You know, so I take the little, like, you know, the son's gorilla, and he's, you know, shooting pneumatic T-shirts into the crowd. Heck, I'd be shooting them over the fence into the prison, you know, the school sucks shirt, into the, you know, boom, boom, boom. Somebody's getting shooting. They're gonna knock out a kid with a shirt. I mean, you know, hey, don't laugh, man. You know, that's exactly.
Well, all right. So that's an interesting. That's it's a silly route to an important question, and it's this. It doesn't have to be everybody, because when we think about, even when we talk about, you know, a voluntary world, am I being cynical when I say that 90% of people, I'm picking that number arbitrarily, are just going to, when things change, right, when there's this major philosophical evolution, and it major, what is that, 5% of people, 10% of people, and then everybody else just says,
doesn't matter.
I guess we're thinking this way now.
It's always the 1-3% that change the planet anyway.
That's what I'm saying. So it seems like an insurmountable obstacle, the number of people that you would need to change, but it's not everybody, because most people, and I don't want to be cynical about humanity, but I think most people will say, okay, this is the thing now. Okay, well, yeah, that sounds good. And they would go along.
17-year-olds that were heavily involved that I worked with. I remember this. It was North or South, I think it's South Carolina.
Yeah.
I was there. It was a homeschooled group. It was from like 9 to 19. I think it was a 21, 22-year-old that they're all homeschooled together. You know,
yeah.
They had kind of like a little group.
Mm-hmm.
They made hundreds of Ron Paul signs. I went there for 2-3 days. They probably made 300 signs. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They put them up between, what was it, Greenville and whatever the heck it was. There was two, like 30 miles apart. Every freaking 100 yards on the chain link between these two cities for 30 miles had a freaking sign. All right? Mitt Romney guys came in, took it down, you know, like Thursday night or Friday or something. They did them again. Screw them. They did them again. Put them back up again. Bite me. You know, Dr. Paul came, you know, spoke, and then a big thing. They're, woohoo! Everybody. And they're sitting there, and I'm going, how many of the other people do I got to change? How many other people need to be exposed to this? How many other people, you know, they're done. You know, these young kids, they're done. You know, and who did they influence? How did they, you know, these are the, and I could spend almost, I didn't have to spend any time with these guys. They already got it at this young age.
Yeah.
And I'm going, these are the people I spend even a little bit of time with them had a big, giant impact on all these other
leverage.
People.
You have tremendous leverage.
Huge leverage forever. An entire lifetime.
Right. So,
and then how old are they now? It's 7 to 8 years later or something.
Yeah.
All right. What's the future?
Mm-hmm.
Junior high. That's what a defendant arc would be, junior high. Why? Because that's when they want to indoctrinate them. That's when they take this puberty thing and they use it. Well, they're forming their ideas and becoming their own person. We need to get you. I'm just a bill.
Right. Yeah. It's a good point, too, because, you know, a lot of we talk about status. Right. We talk about Mitt Romney supporters and Obama supporters. And one of the things that I really just want to stress is that these people are not. I know people who voted for Obama who are smarter than me. Right. Who have skills that I don't, who can do things that I find very impressive. So it's not an intelligence problem. And I never want to feel like I'm talking down to people. What people don't have is access or exposure to this information, because most people just have I have a kid. I have a job. You know, my car isn't running properly. I've got other things that I have to worry about that has to be the center of my attention. And, you know, all my life I've been told by public school and politicians and CNN that this is the domain of experts and authorities, and all that crap will always be taken care of. And what we're saying to people is no. You need to look closer right here. And if people start doing that, they realize that they not only have the intelligence and the time and the capacity to maybe do more than they can think. So I just want to make sure that when we're talking about, you know, the people who are brainwashed or people who are statist, it's not because they're dumb. It's because they don't have the exposure.
Okay,
to this.
I understand. And it's obvious that you spent a lot of time with Richard Grove, because he and I have this exact same conversation. Okay. This is what it is.
Okay.
When he goes up and he does his brain and he has, you know, the links to everything, which I think is cool software, but they get to go back into your computer to do, I go, never mind. But anyway, so what he has is like all the connections between, you know, Quigley writes Tragedy and Hope that then connects to all this other stuff and other stuff and other stuff. That's very cool. He provided a great service in that. He has all these classes that he goes online with. They have all these forums that they're talking about. He does all these great interviews. He got the, you know, the video of the interviews with John Taylor Gatto that spoke at the Freedom Summit. I know John, you know, it's great. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're, you know, hooked up. But my thing is, I'm going, Richard, you're constantly trying to, and even in the older, you got to convince them. They need to understand. I'm going, yeah, I understand that. But I'm tired of fixing people all the time. I'm tired of having to go and unlearn all this other. I'm tired of having to expose them. I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired. And I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to get them when they're 12.
Well, see, that's the other thing, too.
Inoculate them. Don't fix them. Don't treat the disease. Inoculate from the disease.
Right. But see, so what we want is some kind of continuity in a person's in development, right? So you're absolutely right. That's the most important thing.
You own yourself. Done.
But
next.
There's a valuable lesson we can learn from the state. You know, at one point, it seems like somebody who was, you know, the state in a high position of power said, well, how does the world change, guys? You know, what changes the world? Well, education changes the world, technology changes the world, and art are usually three transformative, you know, philosophical, ethical, cultural forces.
They start off with voting.
One person who was, you know, I'm obviously simplifying this, they said, well, we should control all three. You know, we should do education. We'll call it education. We'll do it as a service. Well, we should fund the arts. We should subsidize technology.
We who?
The state.
Which is, you know, the controlled how. What
right,
state do we
but
get?
What I'm saying,
voting!
Yeah, right. So, simple example. So, they fight a war on all fronts, like I said before. Now, what I do, and Rich and I have talked about this, what I do is a ramp to what Rich does, right? Versus having to, you know, encounter what Rich is doing. I mean, Rich is a brilliant guy. He's one of the smartest people.
Tragedy and Hope and all this stuff included in Defending Archimedes, but that's not really for the 12-year-old.
But that's what I told him.
I said, it's not for them. I'm not talking. That is for their older siblings. That's for mom and dad.
But it's for them someday, and it's there in perpetuity. But
they don't have to unlearn it. They don't have to justify this. It's something they already got when they were 12.
Right.
They're going, yeah, I don't need to know about, oh, what's this? Oh, it's all about them, how they're going to rule me. I already know I owe myself. I don't care. Next. You see my point?
So maybe
it's so much work that's being done to try and save people that they'll save themselves once they see their junior high kid, grandson, nephew get, they'll do it for us.
So maybe it needs to be diagrammed better as a curriculum, right? Like, start here. When you feel comfortable here, go here. You know, like I've said the same thing about Free Domain Radio. If you just start with episode 247 of Stefan Molyneux's podcast, and you're 13, you might be pretty overwhelmed.
The
pretty
Matrix
quickly.
Statism, right. Number 13.
Exactly.
Do that one. Done. Next.
Okay. Okay.
I'm done with Stefan. I got it.
But after that, you know, there should be an appetite, right? There should be an appetite because you never, like, no one gets to a point in life with anything that they're passionate about and they say, oh, okay, yeah, I'm good. You know, like I did this show, last podcast I did was talking about the 20-hour method of learning, some book some guy wrote, kind of a gimmick. But if you're really passionate about something, you don't get to just like a level of competence and say, yeah, okay, like the guitar. Okay, well, I know D, C, and G, so I can play like 1,000 pop songs, so I'm good. If you're passionate about it, you want to take it to the next level, and then you reach that level, and you want to go to the next level. So Rich, you know, what he's doing and what all these people are doing, Steph, Wes Bertrand, it has value at some point in someone's development. What I wanted to be was a place to start. You know, I'm not a genius. I'm a regular guy, I say. And this is some information.
See, I understand your point. My thing is, and this is the discussion that Richard and I had. I'm glad he's there.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It is definitely, but the enormous amount of time and energy and resources goes in to trying to fix people. And I'm going,
what do you mean fix people? What do you mean by that?
Expose them to the truth. This is wrong. Stop doing this. Do this. These guys are bad guys. Quit putting your faith in this because of this and that.
Okay,
you know,
all right.
You know, you need to, you know, like unlearn all this propaganda, indoctrination of how it's supposed to kind of, let me tell you the truth kind of thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but if you get them at a younger age and you go, everything I need to know I learned in kindergarten kind of deal, you know, you don't punch, don't steal, don't this, don't that. I mean, you know, it's kind of basic leave me aloneism. If you get that and you go, oh, by the way, you own yourself, which is why in the Arab Spring, we made a big deal at doing the Arabic translation of the philosophy of liberty, because I'm going, what are you guys arguing for? Pharaoh number 300? Yay, we're going to be free. You know, because Hillary said in the State Department, this guy's the new guy in charge. We got the vote and the Muslim Brotherhood, and that lasted for about 6 months. And then I'm going, seriously, stop looking for someone to represent you, represent yourself. And once you get that as a core understanding of a child that's going through puberty, because they're already questioning authority. Mm-hmm. That's why they do junior high. I see this. I've seen. I go and I speak to clients. I had kids. I got four of them going. I could see. And I could see what was happening. That's when they do the Hitler Youth thing. That's when they do the Stalin whatever. That's when they got you doing DARE programs. That's when they got you, you know, and here's, you know how to dial a phone in here and turning this guy in. Mm-hmm. That's when they do it. Why? Because they're questioning authority. They just want to make sure that authority is home or dad or something else, and that they're the good guys empowering you with you go and rock the vote kind of crap. Vote or die, I'm a vote or die. You know, so I'm going, you know, this is, I love South Park, man. I mean, they don't cut.
They did a good job with that.
So I'm going, vote or die. You know, so I'm going, look, I see where the most beneficial use of my time is.
Yeah.
It is to prevent the damage. It is to inoculate against the damage. And what's the bumper sticker that I can use? I own myself.
Uh-huh.
You own yourself. Determine your future is yours. This aptitude test may be a tool for you, not for them, to tell you what to do.
Yeah. You mentioned South Park, and I think that there's an interesting lesson in South Park that would fit nicely into what you're talking about. The theme, the recurring theme on South Park for like 15 years now, is that the kids are smarter than the adults. You know?
Yeah, how hard is that?
I mean, that's what the show is about. That the adults are idiots, and the kids are the one who can take whatever the situation is, usually closely related to current events in the real world, and they can extract a valuable lesson from it. Well, the adults can't. The adults just do the dumb, predictable thing. So whenever people like us go to the children, it's very intimidating. Like for the people who kind of accept and enjoy or are comfortable with the status quo, they say, oh my gosh, they're going after the children. When that's exactly how the status quo was created, by people going after the
freaking
children.
A.
So, but when that mirror is turned and pointed at, you know, them, it's suddenly, it's very, or, you know, it's very
No,
ugly.
That's exactly the impact that I'm talking about.
Right.
It's not that we're trying to convince them. It's that we're inoculating the kids against them. And they're going, no, hell no.
And that's what needs to be explicit, I think, in whatever defending Archimedes. I mean, I think that
should
just be.
We're inoculating the children against the status quo, indoctrinating, turning them into slaves.
But right, so that should just be a continuing theme. I want to show you this script that somebody sent me yesterday, because I think there might be some potential here. But that, no, we think you are capable of making decisions. We think you are capable of self-ownership. And you can contrast that with other messages that are, I mean, what are most adults thinking 13-year-olds are capable of? Voting in the Teen Choice Awards? You know, they have no faith in what young people are able to do. And I'm thinking even younger than that. I mean, I have a nephew who's 13. I see how he's able to see the world clearly in ways that adults can't. And I brought him since he was like 11, and I would get into these arguments with people. I would say, hey, Noah, come here. Can I get your opinion on something? And he would be able to think more clearly about whatever the issue is than some, you know, 50-year-old liberal. So kids have this
point for Ernie.
Yeah, this tremendous potential. But that's something that needs to be explicated in these videos, that we believe in you. This is not a message. We're not trying to propagandize you. We're not trying to control you. We're not trying to manipulate
you. And
I'm
not even caring about the other guys,
right,
the status
right,
quo,
right,
the teachers.
But they're great examples of how to...
Yeah, I know you'll make the point, and they'll see it.
Yeah,
But see, this is what you're saying. Oh, I don't want to antagonize them and freak them out and them get... I'm going, you're not going to have to. They're going to be convicted by watching and seeing themselves in this and how bad, and they'll just bitch about it. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
We're starting a new newspaper. We used to do a newspaper back in the day called Western Libertarian Alliance or Arizona Libertarian or Citizens Take Initiative. We've done hundreds of thousands of copies of copies of this over the years. And the last one we did was in 2004, and then we started doing Freedom's Phoenix and all that kind of stuff. Well, we're going to go back and start doing a newspaper again, of which will be part of this, is Defending Archimedes, and that would be part of the stuff you can pass out with a DVD. Well, we're going to make it a tabloid kind. Instead of having the beautiful covers that we have here for the magazine in color, we're going to go just black and white. Well, it'd be a tabloid, and we'll have really cool graphics and so on there. And then probably the first one would be really great. We just have the school sucks thing on the front. That'd be awesome. You know, you start that off. But what would be some of the articles you would put in there? What would you kind of lead to? Everyone made you look. You know, made you look. What would it be? Larkin Rose win to shoot a cop. Mark J. Victor legalized methamphetamine! ! Made you look. Made you look. Okay.
Yeah.
And, oh, school sucks. Oh, well, maybe that'd be another addition. But the
difference of degrees there.
Well, no. The point is that they'll go, and what did they see? The status quo that happened here when they had to occupy Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
Somebody printed out, was the black man with the AR-15 guy, Chris, took and printed out when to shoot a cop, and he passed it out at the Phoenix Occupy. The DHS and the Fusion Center and the FBI, and they freaked out, saying, because it was the title. But what was in the article? You remember reading it, Larkin's when to shoot a cop? That article, the whole thing was, he was explaining, it's sometime before the cattle car door closes on the train car to the cyanide showers. It's sometime before then. I don't know when before then, but it's before the door latches shut.
Right.
When before that? I don't know, but it's before, okay? So that was the point that he was making. What I knew is that they were going to freak out and make a big... So we made a big stink, and they were going, oh, I can't believe... Oh, look at the... Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd here. Oh,
yeah.
I'm so excited. And then we put it out, and all of a sudden, everybody's reading it, and then it kind of went away. Why? Because they brought attention to reading it, and it convicted them. And that's exactly what's going to happen with the public education. They're going to go, look, their school sucks. Oh, my God. To them, it might as well just say when to shoot a cop. Okay?
Well, yeah, exactly.
And then they'll read it, they'll look at it, and they'll go, damn, maybe we shouldn't have said anything.
And that was one of the things that I was hoping would happen, that people would initially be offended by this, and then they would actually go and investigate it, maybe with just a little bit of open-mindedness that they have, and they would see that there's actually, wow, I had no idea that such a reductive and crude message could take me to something that has, you know, pat myself on the back a little bit, so much depth.
I'm with you, brother.
So they say, wow, I didn't think, you know, school sucks. That's so dismissive and empty. But look where it leads. And I was hoping that people would have that experience. Some obviously have. So that's great.
That's how I would use it. When you make the comment about, you know, what you're worried about, how the status quo is going to react and, you know, how they're going to, you know, respond to this and what's going to be in the press and blah, 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 blah. I don't care.
Well, I don't Right. I don't work on a day, you know, I don't sit there at my desk in front of my microphone going, oh, I hope everyone likes me, you know, but I do. It's something that for the purpose of this conversation, I think it's worth factoring into the equation and then deciding whether or not it can be dismissed. And maybe you're right. Maybe it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't matter if you do the right. I mean, this is where you get in trouble. You know, Stephen Molyneux goes on about divorce your parents and don't go to Thanksgiving and they're, you know, messed up like polio and don't expose and they're toxic to your and don't. So then they freak out and go, oh, you messed up the kids and kind of go after his wife for being a psychologist, whatever the heck.
Whatever
they can. You know, so I'm like, you know, I'm not for, I just don't want to be antagonistic just to be antagonistic. That doesn't mean that he was wrong. I'm just, you know, he express himself however he wants. When they go after you, I want them to be able to go after the title. School sucks. The title, when to shoot a cop, the title, legalized methamphetamine,
sure,
the title.
Sure.
They go after the title, and it brings attention to what is the content. When they go into the content, they're going, damn it, all we did was just market their content. And I go, yes, you did.
Yeah, exactly.
You moron. And I was counting on it, because you guys are just morons. Like, you see me on CNN, I go to, you know, Sanchez, I go on CNN, they're going, blah, 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 blah. Well, it looks like you. I go, yep, you guys are so easy.
Yeah,
I go, you guys are so easy to, I can sit there and play you guys because you're easy. How are you? Because you guys, you're so stupid because you sit there and you're worried about titles or images or stuff, but you don't really understand the content that you're promoting for us.
Yes, it's content-less marketing is what they're focused on. Everything is superficial.
Yeah,
and
it's all title.
Facades.
Shock and awe.
Yeah.
It's the intro to the program. Oh,
right.
My God, how many F-15s can we buy?
So maybe that's just shocking for people who work in mainstream news or that kind of, you know, preying on these innocent minds of children to see that something actually has depth. Like, maybe they just don't anticipate that anything is more than a facade. That's interesting.
I this is where my kids hate when I do this. I go like this. I go, look, I don't think I know. I know. Okay. You know, but, I mean, why is that? Because I've done it 15 gazillion times. I mean, I already know it's like, you know, you put this in here. It's like a chemistry experiment. You add this and this and this and a little dust of that. And all of a sudden this happens.
Right.
Every single time. So when I do this, and it's always going to be the title, made you look, the cover, especially the bad guys, they gotta read it. Or they're gonna go after it. They'll criticize it. They'll say something. They'll get on the block. Oh, look at this thing. I got this and this guy on Facebook and kind of, woo, there ought to be a law enforcement. Somebody gotta go get it. But the whole time, the first person I send it to was all the law enforcement and legislators. Mm-hmm. I go, here. Now this is what they're talking about. They're going, oh, yeah, it's Ernie being Ernie. Fish on, you know. And I tell you, it's the reporters that have not had experience with us before. And they'll come in and go, oh, and they're going to get the story. And I'm going, well, golly, shuck and gee willikers, Mr. Whatever. You know, and they'll go and they'll write something, and they didn't get the warning. You know, the other guys are going, you know, you idiot, man. You just got sucked in by Ernie one more time. Mm-hmm, and I can see 15 gazillion things that we do that. And this will be one of them. I already know what's going to happen. I don't think I know. I know.
So, okay. Yeah, this kind of speaks to something, the question I always have, too. Like, where are the haters? Where are my haters? I don't even worry about them. It's not, but no,
they're coming.
No,
you know?
But what you're talking about is using them, and I'm not talking about manipulating or antagonizing people. But when somebody comes along and they're outraged, how can I leverage that?
Why are they outraged?
Well,
they're taking over what they want is the manipulation of Generation Next when it matters the most. And who knows this more than any? The state. That's
right.
Why they have junior high. That's why all this mandated. What I found out, I was doing this, and I got a call from a guy that was, he does a charter school. He's a head of a charter school for gifted kids that runs out of the YMCA, the kind of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes like this. He goes, we just went to, they call the Ames test, and you, Michelle, you probably heard about this. It's all this testing that even the teachers got to pass, and they're like, I need to study. So they do all this testing, and he found out, he goes, you know, Ernie, you were right. the largest demand in hours for mandated state, federal, whatever programs to qualify for blah, blah, blah. All these programs is way more mandated hours you have to complete, yada, 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 for seventh and eighth grade. He goes, that's when all the mandates are way over elementary or high school is junior high. And I go, yep, doesn't surprise me one freaking bit. Mm-hmm. So when you go after that, the state already knows this. So what are they going to do? They're going to do the same thing the Department of whatever the heck did on, you know, the letters that Chris was handing out. They're going to see school sucks and defending Archimedes and all this kind of stuff as the threat it is to the status quo and the system. And the more it's a threat to that, without even mentioning or going to them, it's just going to the kids, you own your life. This is your responsibility. Here's how empowered you are. Here's where the information is. This is a perspective that you need to share with your family and the parents and kind of discuss. And what you do that and give them off ramp in the, you know, schools and you do that and they will come out of the woodwork because it is the threat without even directly challenging them.
Right.
And it's a global thing. It's a universal thing. It's not even, you know, by state. It has to be kind of a universal message. You own yourself in Arabic to Tahrir Square. All of a sudden, International Society for Individual Liberty, they go, holy crap, Ernie, the second most downloaded of all these videos across the entire internet is Saudi Arabia, followed by Morocco and Egypt, next to the United States. And they go, what the hell did you do? And I go, don't worry about it, man. All you had to do is just seed it. I went in Tahrir Square. What, you think they weren't going to be all over the place with our Haria Phoenix and Facebook and Twitter? What the hell did you think? It went to 2,600 Twitter followers in the first 3 weeks, and they canceled the account. So we started back up again with different spelling.
Right.
I can spell Haria with one or two R's. I don't care. You know? So the thing is that I already know. I don't think I know. I know what's going to happen. But we need to take the time to craft it and do it. School sucks.
Right. Now, okay.
Next.
Then we've got, we should talk about that. We should talk about some kind of campaign that goes directly at young people in a face-to-face kind of way, maybe.
See, then you're into meetups and you're into groups and you're into whatever. And that's when you start getting parents will freak out. You got, you know, 13-year-olds showing up at the whatever.
No. Not you like know. That. And so something where things can be handed to young people.
No, the DVD.
Yeah.
You know, see, you've seen our packets when we do, you know, like, you know, stuff with Cop Block or whatever and our things. You know, we'll put, you know, different pieces of paper we print in there, you know, the QR code sticker, the, you know, kind of little activist kits that go in there. I remember when we were doing the Ron Paul bags. You know, that's where that started. We had so much crap we wanted to pass out. We finally bought lunch bags by the thousands and had this big rubber stamp, Ron Paul Revolution, we put on it. And it had bumper stickers and all kinds of crap that we put in. And it's kind of the, you know, the grab bag thing. Well, we do that for the kids in school and throw in a T-shirt. I mean, you know, and when you first do this, it has to be that way. It has to be like, we do hundreds of shirts. Mm-hmm. We'll go and get them in bulk. I got a bunch in there.
So how about
bitty kid ones? You know?
If I could come up with some kind of video to be produced.
I'm sorry, did I say it too early?
Then what are you thinking? Like one video for me, 2 minutes, a series?
How much can we can compress freaking 15 gazillion hours on it? I've done Obama deception, America, freedom to fascism, and for liberty, Ron Paul revolution, watered wither tree thing. All three of them compressed in one video. There's nothing you guys are going to come up that I don't have enough 3 hours worth I can put on, you know, 5 hours, 6 hours compressed on a video.
All right. So what I would want to know are what are the viewing habits of a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old?
Now, this is one thing that Larkin said. He goes, you know, when we put the DVD into the computer, I don't want it to go to the menu. I want it to go to the menu after it has the first video. And I go, okay, but then it needs to be like a 3 to 5 minute intro kind of Josie Outlaw thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going, okay, so that's what we were working on before Josie Outlaw took off. And I'm going, because they did a sample one and then he kind of took it down because it really kind of wasn't what, it was more like what they're doing. And I needed just a quick direct to this 12-year-old saying, look, man, you own yourself and kind of you need to know and the evil of and you're kind of and the light and pace and voluntary and rock and roll and the future is and all kinds of, you know, and it's the world is your oyster and done. You know, you do that, well, they're like, oh, all right, cool. Okay, well, what's on this thing? And then you have the next thing, and you got stuff in there. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we have that we'd include. Well, that's where it goes in there. So how would you open it, get them to? They just put it in. Boom. It's got their attention, and you got some, I don't know, do you have a young person? You know, probably. Is it female, male? I don't know.
I might,
you see my point?
I might, except for this intro video, except for this hook, I might already have everything made.
Done. Waiting on you.
No.
Next.
I'm done. I already did the work.
Okay.
So we might now. So we might have to have a conversation where I produce one more video, and I think I'm forming an idea for a 2-minute introduction video. I can kind of see it.
I got 20. I sat there. I took Brett.
Do you have
out
any puppets?
There. I took Brett. What?
I need a puppet. Do you have any animal puppets?
I got a sock.
No. You have puppet. Michelle has puppets. All right. I'm going to browse Michelle's puppet collection. And maybe, oh, man. I might have an idea.
The answer is yes. I took Brett and Michelle out there, and I said, I want you to see this. And I go in one of the storage places. I go, you see this? There's 25,000 blank DVDs sitting right there, and there's plenty more where that came from of people that would donate. I set this aside. It was 30,000, mm-hmm. and I used 5,000 because they pissed me off on some Sandy Hook Second Amendment kind of. We did, you know, a series, and we kind of nipped a bunch of stuff here in Arizona. Oh, really? You guys want to play? Let's play. And they go, ah, never mind. So I go, we used them for that. But I got 25,000 sitting there for this project. When you are ready. And we can start adding in on the other guys. I got a bunch of people, a whole line of different activists, a lot of people that you know that are ready to put in their contribution to this. Because not only do they have something to say along these lines, they have their own database, their own network, their own, including Richard Grove.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Richard probably going, yeah, Richard, absolutely. I need to have your all this connected in. We have and do and kind of done peace. You know, yes, definitely. But that's not the message with the first initial 2 to 5 minute kind of you
hook.
Own yourself.
The hook.
Here's all the stuff to kind of, you know, you're there. Because once you get that concept, it's all over. All of a sudden now you got Saudi Arabia downloading the philosophy of liberty everywhere. Mm-hmm. See my point?
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to go against that? Well, we got attacked by, you know, WebSense, which is a subcontractor of the Mossad of Israel out of Germany, blah, 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 that we had Michael Kiske, our attorney and web security guy, doing letters, go, I see exactly what you did, how you did it with these servers, and are you sure you want to play this game, let's rock? And I put it up there, and I'm going, yeah, we see what you did, and how you did it, and why you did it was because of the Horea Phoenix thing. Will they start to come after us because of this? Of course they will! If we're lucky! I'm like, and you know, so I'm that's why I keep emphasizing. I'm sitting here waiting on what? I don't know. It'll mature, get you excited.
Yeah,
it's sitting there.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. I don't have the resources and the platform that you need to all of a sudden to become an international thing. I don't do anything unless I know it's going to change the planet from the beginning. Why would I got other stuff to do, man. I got you shoulds that change planet all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big plan. I've had defending Archimedes in my head for at least 4 or 5 years because I understood. I saw it, you know, throughout my entire life of where they go after it. And I tell you how it happened. I would go as county chairman of the Libertarian Party. We were invited to go speak at elementary and junior high and high school and college. I go and do the tour, and then the next year I do it again, and the next year, and they stop inviting Republicans and Democrats because they were liars and boring, and they hadn't. We didn't have fun. So, you know, I go, self-ownership and, you know, property and government role of and all that kind of stuff. Elementary, that's cool, and that was, you know, like having a movie. It was better than listening to the teacher and cool and thanks and, you know, and yay. High school, same thing, yay. Junior high? Right before the bell, 2 minutes before, I could go, and what do you need to be able to have your Jetson car? And what do you need to this? And if you want to live a better, and what's the future going to be? What do you need? More freedom. And you need more freedom. We have more freedom. Freedom. And go, and the bell ring there. Freedom. 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 And you're walking out in the hallway. Freedom. Freedom. Junior high kids were the only ones I could do it, and I could do it every single time. And I'm going, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I realized what it was. It was puberty. And that's why they have junior high, because they are that susceptible. They
right.
use it as a brainwashing years.
Kill that energy, yeah.
They want to redirect it. They want to do it. That's why mandatory youth. I mean, why did they have, you know, school? It was all of a sudden, no, it's mandated up to eighth grade. It used to be eighth grade. Oh, well, that wasn't working. Now we go to 12th grade. Well, that wasn't working. We got to go down to freaking preschool.
I've got an idea. I've got an idea that's not brilliant yet, but it feels like the seeds of a very good idea. We make a video for YouTube, or for this, it can go on this DVD, but it could also play on YouTube. And it starts out looking like your typical stupid YouTube video. And it has puppets, right? It's a trick. It's a trick and it has puppets. We got to talk about this. We got to talk about this when we're done, because this is something that could be shot in a day. I've got an idea. And I have a whole pool of videos that I've already made. Have you ever seen any of the videos I've made? I'm just asking.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen?
Well, I've seen your podcast. You know, some stuff with you in it.
Nothing with my face. No.
Now, it's Wheels Off Liberty stuff. I've seen. There's of you guys up in the thing from Pork Fest.
No, none of that. No.
That's the only time I've ever seen you on screen.
When we're done, I want to show you a video.
All right.
And I want.
Let's play it right now.
Okay.
Everybody's gonna be pissed off. I don't show it to them.
All right.
Okay. Where am I going?
Have you ever seen Why Libertarianism Is So Dangerous? Okay. It's called Why...
Am I going to YouTube?
All right. So this is what I mean. Yeah, YouTube. And this is what I mean by a delightful little trick we could do.
All right. YouTube. All right. What am I looking for?
Why libertarianism is so dangerous.
Why libertarianism is so dangerous. All right. Why libertarianism is so dangerous? I don't know. Let's find out. Okay.
Thank you very much.
This video is a simplification of a more complex but not terribly difficult to understand set. I will. I want to read. It always goes faster than I can read. Okay. Set of ideas. Please see the description for further research, suggestions, and links. And I'm already bored. Okay. Go ahead.
Because you paused it.
Yeah, whatever.
Hi. My name is Brett, and I'm currently recovering from a dangerous and extreme belief system. A belief system that if I had not taken action, most likely would have landed me in jail or even a mental institution. This belief system has many names, but it is most often referred to as libertarianism. For years, I would frighten ordinary people with long rants about the non-aggression principle. That's the central ethical stance in libertarianism, which asserts that the initiation of physical force against persons or property, or the threat of such force, is inherently illegitimate, regardless of what kind of excuses somebody makes up to aggress. I know, when I hear myself say it out loud today, I realize how crazy I once was. But I've made a lot of progress. Through my exposure to new points of view and sources of information, I've realized that I was being just too optimistic about the huge group of people who live their lives peacefully and mind their own business, and too cynical about the tiny group of people who disregard these utopian notions of non-aggression, property rights, and self-ownership in order to keep us safe and maintain stability.
It looks like you got some skills here, man. How long ago did you do this video?
Maybe a year.
Okay, so, I mean, your skills have improved. There's more. And where should they go? What should they type in to be able to see the rest of this video?
Well, the point, it's called Why Libertarianism Is So Dangerous, and the point was, this video is long. I think it's like 13 minutes long. How many views does it have?
Says 58,000, but that don't mean anything, you know?
Well, I mean,
no, it could be 300 million for all we know. I mean, I don't trust their counter.
Okay. The point is that it's kind of a troll video. Right, because it seems like it's against, just for the sake of time, it seems like it is a person has reformed themselves, right, and they've come back to a realistic way of looking for the world. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, government isn't perfect, but we need to vote for Obama. But what it does is, through the worst case scenario of having a voluntary world tomorrow, like, what if all the worst things happened? What would be the outcome? Well, what do you get in the end? What do you have a prediction for what the worst case scenario is of a free world?
Individuals taking care of themselves and banding with others that, you know, they associate with voluntarily.
You're not being dark enough, Ernie.
No, I think that's what the end result would be.
I mean, at one point in human history, there was a voluntary world. But because people didn't have education, people didn't have the philosophy of liberty, what came out of that world? The state.
Government.
Government, right? So we don't have to repeat that mistake again. But what this says is in 2013, 2014, if all the worst things happened, what are people so afraid of? What would be the ultimate worst-case scenario of a voluntary world? It would be very similar probably to our current world. It could have some darker forms, but right now we live, not just in our own accumulation of knowledge and philosophy, but the state has been accumulating knowledge and lessons from the past as well. So they're kind of, people keep talking about this doomsday, Alex Jones, the camps scenario, but I think that they've found this point, right, where they can have just slowly turning the water up on the frog, you know, but maybe not going to the extremes of like Mao in China or Hitler in Germany. They've developed a form of statism that is sustainable, right?
It always evolves to that, though.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, that this right now is a compendium of the lessons from the past. So that video, if it was 3 minutes, would be exactly what I'd be trying to, you know, that kind of that style to younger people.
Yeah, let's work on it a little bit because I can see.
I've already got the idea. Totally different. Right, that video is for adults.
Okay,
that video is very much for adults.
It could easily be included. It's in the category of, I don't get it yet, along with Richard Grove stuff. But, you know, in the category. But I'll tell you one that really had an impact with me. It was Stefan Molyneux. There was two videos. One was the Statism is Dead Matrix 13
or
something. I thought that was awesome. It's like, you know, yep, you want to have a system to where you have, it's more productive if you got free range chickens. Like, we got our chickens out here, big field, they're healthy, they're happy, we get good egg production kind of thing, it's all paced good. But you know what? I got the fence.
Yeah.
You're still, they go, in the end, you're still, you know, you're still in the chicken McNugget box, okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might be, you know, happier, but in the end, you're still ours. You know, the
you might be free
still,
range, but you're still food.
Yeah, you're still the ranchers. So I'm going, okay. So then he had another one that was the end result of a more free society and a more free market, more free constitutional republic, more free government is what do you do? You produce a much more productive society that even an itty-bitty little bit that goes to the state is still an enormous amount of funding they get to buy, you know, them, they got their armored personnel, local sheriff, we rule you people, okay?
Right, so this was actually another video that thought of and never made, and I was trying to get my chicken guy. I have a chicken guy. I guess I have a chicken guy in Arizona, too.
Chicken
so
guy.
This could be done here. Yeah, chicken guy. So my New Hampshire chicken guy, you know, was, we were talking about this. I said, I need some information on chickens. How smart are they? How many eggs can they produce? How many, a meat bird, how much meat will it yield? I want all the stats on what the net worth of a chicken is. What sense does it make to own a chicken versus the work that you have to put into it to get that output? So you go through, you just do a 90-second video. Chickens have an IQ of 6. They can produce X amount of eggs and X pounds of meat. But look at all of the thought that's gone into farming them. And then just say, you're a human being. You know, your IQ is, your average IQ is 110. That might not be true. Might be a little lower. I don't know. But you know, it was around 100. Higher than 6. Higher than a chicken's. And your productive output is unlimited. Do you think no one ever put this thought? I'll throw this idea out there. Somebody else can make this video. You know, do you think no one ever put this much thought into, you know,
how you manage human beings?
Yeah. Are you that naive? You know, and that's just an introduction.
They wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong.
Right. Right. They did it with chickens. So we don't say it's a conspiracy. Like when human beings realized they were smarter than plants and started growing them from the seeds, no one called it a conspiracy. When human beings realized that they were smarter than animals and started putting fences around them, nobody called it a conspiracy. But the idea,
it's a border. Protect from the guys that will invade us from the outside.
But the idea that some human beings came to believe that they were somehow illuminated and they could protect or occult knowledge from everybody else and use it against them. When you start talking like that, now suddenly people say it's a conspiracy. But it's just going to the next step. Hey, guys, we're smarter than the plants. Let's grow them. Hey, guys, we're smarter than the animals. Let's put them in pens and turn them into meat and eggs and milk. But when some human being said, hey, we can protect knowledge from all the other human beings and use it to control them, people go, oh, well, that's ridiculous. So, but it's true. And I think,
junior high.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let me give you a scene of a movie, and I use this on the show a lot, and it really had a big impact on me as a good illustrative example. You ever see Apocalypto, Mel Gibson's The Aztecs, you know, Central America, whatever?
I've never seen it, no.
If you see that, I mean, it's kind of a cool story, blah, 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 Aztecs going around, other indigenous people, they're taking, enslaving them, and putting them on the altar, and ripping their heart out, and pump, 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 chopping their head off, and they roll down the thing to another one, the worship of the whatever. And as they're doing it, they're at the top of the pyramid, and all the people are there, and they're in the bloodthirsty, you know, we captured all these guys, and we're sacrificing the blood rolling down, you know, streaming down the steep steps of the pyramid or whatever. As he's raising the knife, he's going to do the next guy, which is our hero that just makes it, they stop, you know, and then he goes off to whatever. As he's raising the knife, all of a sudden he stops. And he kind of turns over and he looks at the king and they're like, yep, here it comes. And I know exactly what the feeling was. They stopped because the eclipse started. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Arizona, there was an eclipse in the late 80s, I think, one time. I was outside in the sun working, doing whatever. And all of a sudden, no cloud went. And you couldn't really have a perception of it less light. But all of a sudden, the heat really went away. You know, I'm going, whoa, all of a sudden, something, it's like air conditioner got put on, you know? I'm like, yeah. All of a sudden, it got cooler. Because, I mean, here, when the sun be hitting you, it hitting you, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just at him going, what? Oh, yeah, there was an eclipse coming today. I remember, and then, you know, the eclipse kind of partial, whatever. And I go, that's what that priest was feeling. He could tell the radiation. It kind of, so all of a sudden, and he's going out there going, booga, 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 booga. And we kind of did, and kind of the sun's going to go away. And these peasants, did they share that knowledge with them? Was there an education? Was there a school that said, oh, this is what an eclipse is? Hell no. The elite and the priests and the guys in charge and the king and whatever, they got all this, you know, Stonehenge and sundials and all that. They know when the eclipse is.
Yeah.
That's how they get power. Okay.
Right. Exactly.
Knowledge. And
exactly.
They go, you know what? I predicted and I made and the sun went away and I brought it back. And guess who's some bitch in charge now?
Right.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Exactly.
You are. The sun went away like you said it was and you got to come back and everything. And damn, I was so afraid and you be in charge.
But that's exactly the, you know, where they started. And they said, well, you know, see, here's the thing. I'm kind of this magician guy, so I'll just be in charge. And maybe you guys can just spend your whole lives building my cemetery. Now, the Egyptian idea. But eventually, that just transferred to the state. You know, it was, oh, I'm God. I mean, that's where it started. And you can see the state's retreat. You can see the authoritarian retreat over the course of thousands of years, Ernie, right?
Yeah.
Where it starts like, well, I am God. Okay. And then throughout that, you have people's expanding knowledge and their curiosity. And they say, no, you're not God. And then you just see, like, if this all happened in one conversation, the person who wants this power says, I'm God. People eventually say, no, you're not. Oh, okay. Well, I know God. I talk to him and he tells me what to do. I'm kind of his chosen guy. People say, no, you're not. And he said, well,
I got a gun.
well, you're skipping to the end, right? And then they said, okay, well, I'm not,
you elected me God.
It's not God. It's, I don't do the will of God. You're right. That does sound silly. I you know what I do? I do the will of the people. I do the will of the people. Right. And so now over the course of the last 50 years, you see them in super retreat mode where it's like, look, you know, people are trying to kill you. They live in caves. They're plotting against you. You need us. No? Okay, well, we'll give you free health care.
Well, I want everybody to know why they need us.
So now they're all the way to the end. Now they're all the way at the end, and that's scary in a way, because where are they going to go from here? They're out of ideas. 500 years ago, they could say, yeah, I'm God, or I have a relationship with God, and then you have the Age of Enlightenment, and they said, well, you know, if people are enlightened, we still need to control them, so let's just tell them that they're in charge, and they can fill out paperwork and you know, have some say in their government. And now people lost faith in that ideology, so it's retreated all the way to the point of, look, you know, people are trying to kill you, and we'll give you free shit. you know, that's where they're at.
You know, you can see, I mean, you're helping me make my point, I hope.
Yeah,
you know, all of this is, you just skip to the end and you go back to where, when did that indoctrination start? Well, at birth. I mean, you know, hell, it's, you know, TV on Disney Channel. Holy crap. I mean, Disney, if you're letting your kids watch Disney, man, you got a whole bunch of deprogramming you got to do. I'm like, damn. I watch this stuff going, are you freaking kidding me? I mean, aside from, you know, every little, my granddaughter and grandson got to go to Disneyland and they want a princess dress. I mean, you know, I'm going, seriously? You know, oh, with Disney, you know, on it. And I'm going, I can see the indoctrination. So how do we separate them from that? And I'm, the first thing that is really where I have the most impact, I think, that we could do is the junior high thing. And it's all of these superstitions that are inoculated against, the most dangerous superstition is inoculated against on one concept. I own my own life. If I can get that and you got to demonstrate that a little bit and how they take responsibility, then all of a sudden they're starting to learn about things that they think are interesting. They're starting to incorporate different things that they think is, I'm going to learn how to do CAD because I want to 3D print something.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and do my own little chemistry lab thing because it's kind of cool. I'm going to do it. You know.
Yeah. I want to learn how to map the Rhodes Roundtable and their connection to all these other groups, which is where Richard Grove comes in, right? So there's, mm-hmm. you see that's what I'm talking about, the ramp from where we start to where it can go. And there's all kinds of people doing all different versions about that. Maybe they decide they want to read Introduction to Objectivist Epistemology by Leonard Peikoff at some point.
Or not.
Right? Or not. And I recommend not. You know, if you can avoid it, if you can get the Cliff's Notes and still pick up the same things, yeah. Or maybe they decide they want to scrutinize, you know, some of the philosophers like Immanuel Kant or George Hegel, who are so responsible. Nobody knows who they are or what they stood for, or what their philosophy was. But those people shaped so much of the collectivist ideology that we live in today. So maybe they want to go and do their own deconstructions of those people. That's easier to do today, but they need the ramp. And you're talking about like the bottom of the ramp, right? Which is where we have to start, and it's very, very important. So just in a, you know, in a nutshell, you've made me more enthusiastic about this project.
Well, good, and because I, you know, that's kind of was hopefully my goal.
I don't know what would be wrong with me to leave here less enthusiastic. I don't know.
You know, think
I
about
wouldn't
it.
Have paid attention or something.
Think about it. You know, we have, I mean, some people I recognize. It was Cody Wilson was a perfect example. You know, 3D gun guy. When he started doing that project, and he's on The Guardian, and he has Frederick Bastiat's The Law in one hand and AK-47 in the other, and I'm going, oh, he so gets it. Mm-hmm. This I had him on, like, you know, I don't know, 8 times or so. I'm like, you know, stay on the radio because they want you to be, they want you to not be in the press. They're going to come after you, which they are. They're doing whatever those are going to do. But I'm going, I mean, my goal is just keep you alive. I mean, you know, keep you out there, keep you, because he's really smart. And I go to him one time, it was Davi Barker was over, and we were talking about some dark wallet stuff and features and stuff in their new Bitcoin wallet thing. And I go, Cody, I got to ask you a question, man. You're one of them, aren't you? And he goes, what do you mean, one of them? I go, you're one of those big brain guys. You're at least a 160 IQ or something. He goes, about 170.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so obvious. They're thinking way down the road. They're like, and the state's going to do this, and then they're going to do this, and we're going to do this. I mean, it's just, and I see a lot of people I've met that are very smart. It is a memory thing. It's a scenario. They can hold thoughts in their mind and kind of calculate, and then go to the next step, and the next step, and the next step, and they build it in their head. I do it more based on a principle because I'm, you know, not as smart as a lot of other people. I'm not an idiot, but I'm not as smart as a lot of people. So I just take, you know, experience. I know what happened. I've tried 15 gazillion things. I already know what happens. Mm-hmm. I know this and this. Why? Well, I don't know why because, well, okay, now I know why. It's because of, you know, blah, blah, blah. Experience. That's where the wisdom comes from. Some people just have a freaking higher cognitive. They just rock and roll, but they come from a different foundation, like Richard Grove. Richard Grove's another one of these guys. Super intelligent. I made sure that he got hooked up with Chris Duane from Silver Shield.
Yeah.
You know, I put those guys together, had a show together, kind of, you know, peace, discuss, you know, because I could see that they read the same books. They go there. I understand the power of what they have, but they are missing, in my opinion, the importance of what you're doing with the youth. See, I'm going, yes, this is all fixing people. This is all, you know, damage control. This is all, you know, showing and giving the history up, which is good, and it needs to be there. And John Taylor Gatto had a big impact on my generation. My thing, though, is I'm tired of fixing everybody all the time.
I agree. So, we covered a lot. You want to wrap up?
Yeah, I think we're done. You know, the thing is that what I want to do is that you guys, you know, out there know that this is how this stuff happens. We have a lot of times these discussions are done privately, or we're sitting on the lawn, or we're out at the Pork Fest, and, you know, we're recreated in various ways, and the imagination flows, or whatever the heck, you know, ideas come up. My only thing is that I never embrace so much an idea, you know, that is not ripe yet. You know, I kind of a framework or whatever, and how and things and so on. Because what's my main goal? I own myself before I hit puberty, or as I'm going through puberty. How powerful is a, you know, I'm already challenging authority. I mean, it's innate, you know, the testosterone, estrogen is going, kind of, ooh, I'm challenging authority. Where do I challenge? Look over here. Here's a good challenge. Ooh, yeah, definitely that. And it sticks. How do you unlearn the truth? It's very hard. You just got to be able to provide it. And who are one of those people is going to hit, you know, the entire planet? I'm way more confident in Brett Vinat's, you know, school sucks project changing the planet than I think he is. Why? Because I know how powerful it is to change the mind, or just inoculate the mind of a kid going through puberty. You do that, whoa, that's the future. And bad guys have known this for a long time. It's our turn. Peace.